not included.
Healthcare.gov would be fixed by the end of the month, but the White House is now urging supporters not to immediately push for new enrollments next week. That's because of concerns about capacity.
The team of technicians brought in to fix healthcare.gov did not take a break for Thanksgiving. They worked through the holiday, trying to meet the administration's self-imposed deadline that the website be fixed by December.
By the end of this month, it will be functioning for the majority of people who are using it. They'll be able to shop, see what their choices are.
Remember, on October 1st, the day healthcare.gov launched, only 6 people were able to enroll. As of early November, there were just under 27,000 enrollments through the federal website. The administration has been tempering expectations, warning that problems will continue.
It's a pretty aggressive schedule to get to the entire punch list by the end of November.
White House officials say error rates and wait times are substantially improved, and healthcare.gov can now handle 50,000 people at once. But they worry that a surge of customers beyond that could provoke another round of outages.
This thing isn't working. And when President Obama and the Democrats keep fighting in a partisan way for a law that is taking away the health care from millions of people, more people lost their health insurance because of Obamacare that have been able to sign up for it, that should be a real signal that we ought to get some bipartisan cooperation to come in and say, listen, it's not working,
from the speaker.
Let's start over.
The bad news, when he unrolled his notes, he realized his premiums are going up. From $433 per month with a $700 deductible for the speaker and his wife, it's now $449 with a $1,000 deductible. And that's just for him. Mrs. Boehner is going on Medicare. The good news for the speaker, it could be worse. His new premiums include a $426 discount that members of Congress and staffs are getting on their health insurance under Obamacare. The speaker is accepting that subsidy even though he once supported a Republican plan to take it away.
Why don't we make sure that every American is treated just like we are?
That sentiment apparently so October. That's not all. Mr. Boehner is also a famous smoker.
I know that smoking is probably not good for my health.
Now, if he had bought insurance in his home state of Ohio, insurance companies could have charged him up to 50% more. Call it the Beltway boondoggle. Under Obamacare in Washington, D.C., there is no penalty for smoking. Guess those smoke-filled rooms where all that
the
compromise happens.
John Boehner is a lying thief. He is trying to portray himself as something he is not. You now have the evidence of his chief of staff in bed with Harry Reid saying, can't we bury this? Can't we just make this happen? Can't we just keep the subsidies for us while we pretend to fight against them?
I've indicated support, transparency, and openness on the part of the Fed. And I think with respect to monetary policy, in terms of the range of information and the timeliness of that information, we are one of the most transparent central banks in the world. What I would not support is a requirement that we, any requirement that would diminish the independence of the Federal Reserve in implementing and deciding on implementing in monetary policy. For 50 years, Congress has recognized that there should be an exception to GAO ability to audit the Fed to avoid any political interference in monetary policy. I believe it's critically important to the economic performance of this country, and we've seen this around the world, that allowing a central bank to be independent in formulating monetary policy is critical to assuring markets and the public that we will achieve price stability. And I would be very concerned about legislation that would subject the Federal Reserve to short-term political pressures.
Are you prepared to stand there and filibuster again?
We'll see, but I do want to make the point that for 3 years we've asked Harry Reid for a vote on audit the Fed. It passed the House overwhelmingly. Over 100 Democrats and all of the Republicans voted for auditing the Fed. We're supposed to be in charge of the Fed. We created the Fed, and Congress has abdicated its duty, and a lot of people are getting rich off of Fed activity. We have a huge stock market bubble. A lot of wealthy people get wealthier, but I think a lot of poor people are getting poorer, and I think our economy is struggling. There's an illusion of wealth. So I'm for looking into what's going on at the Fed and not allowing it to be secret.
All right.
Batteries not included.
Liberty's Thunder, formerly the Tex and Rex Show, some assembly required, batteries not included. But you may still get battered. Without batteries, the newfangled gadget you trampled and suffocated other deal-hungry madmen to buy on Black Friday won't work. And without conservatives, the GOP shall remain dead, and this country will continue to hurtle toward fundamental change from a constitutionally restrained republic to an empire abroad and a police state at home. The Obamacare website's failure is merely a distraction from the real failure of the so-called Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act law and the catastrophic surrender of a rhino-run GOP from stopping it. Real conservatives presented the rhinos with a chance, real, not rhetorical, to gut this stinking law during the government funding fight. Sadly, the Senate Surrender Caucus chose to batter the conservatives led by Cruz and Lee instead of defeating the Democrat socialists and rolling back, or at least delaying, this corporatist debacle. The rhinos didn't even bat an eye when Reid nuked the Senate. What did America do in response? Why, we gorged on turkey and all the trimmings on Thursday and went on a gluttonous shopping spree on Black Friday. Did we pause to thank the provider of all these goods? This obsession with materialism and a lack of focus on the conservative principles that built this great republic permits the GOP to run without conservative batteries, extinguish the last vestiges of economic power that drives the real economy. Yet the stock markets appear to be at an all-time high. Private companies seek to replace the defunct Obamacare website, and retailers entice Americans to spend, borrow, and spend more. Is this capitalism run amok? Or is it corporatism or fascism replacing our robust free market batteries with government-enforced corporatist facsimiles? Your new toy fails to function when the batteries are not included, and our economy will crash and burn when there are no real batteries to power it. Instead of private property, entrepreneurship, and free enterprise competing to provide the most benefit to the most people at the highest quality and the lowest cost, we have a faux economy run on monetary gymnastics and Fed fabrications, government-enforced cartels, and criminal government taking from the people, especially the poor and middle class, to give to the cronies and sycophants while waging war across the planet to plunder even more. If you want your constitutional republic back, get busy replacing the fake batteries that are eroding this country with real conservative batteries, or you will end up battered by the criminal government and its corporate cronies. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their masters at the so-called Federal Reserve by standing with real conservatives who were right to demand the repeal or at least the delay of the Obamacare debacle. The batteries are not included. You have to be the battery that powers the new conservative revolution. To defeat the Democrats, first you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, where there are no batteries included.
This is Trog from the West Coast, formerly Alaska. You know, that was quite a entrance there, and I mean that with total respect. I know I joke around and call you a poet all the time, but there's something big going on, and I'm not sure people get it, and I understand why it's confusing to people. It's confusing because it's so freaking confusing out there. You know, we went from the IRS to the NSA to the AP scandal, you know, to a record number of whistleblowers being, you know, prosecuted to, you know, Snowden leaving the country before he exposed his stuff. You know, I mean, it's just on and on, you know, to Hastings dying and Breitbart dying. And I think that just people are over freaking whelmed. I know that some days, I don't know, I think maybe the only reason we don't get overwhelmed is we focus in on, you know, the key core elements and always bring it back to the Constitution. And I think that that's really, really, really important. You know, for me, I have a, you know, a traditional background in life from a country that was different than we live in today. So I have some reflection. I feel sorry for these kids, you know, the Obama nation kids, you know, that are coming into adulthood and have grown up in this stuff, because their reflection, they have to go out and actually learn history. I've lived history, and you have lived history, so we have that, you know, real life experience. I think that the battle, one of the things that is really frustrating to me, and that's why we're doing this other show, like we need to do another show, right, on the what is a conservative, you know, and I think that that is so important because there's a lot of confusion. What is the Tea Party? You know, it is constantly battered by both the left and the, you know, Republicans and the Democrats and the mainstream media, you know, constantly in the news. And yet the average person, I don't think they even understand what the basic platform was about. You know, oh, yeah, they're a bunch of teabaggers. Oh, they want to take us back to, you know, like 1780 or something. No, that's not it. Tea was taxed enough already. And I think that it has the potential to very, very, very have a strong impact on 2014. And that's what all of this conversation is really about. I mean, 2016 ain't going to happen until 2014 gets over with. And that's always been a focus of ours, you know, is to be able to say, you know, yeah, there's a lot going on. Yeah, you know, they're trying to, you know, get us in a war in Syria. And now, you know, the boogeyman Iran, you'd think they'd left the planet and they brought them back to the planet so they'd have a boogeyman to, you know, distract everybody with, and the neocons can gear us up for a war with Russia and China. You know what I mean? I mean, there are days when you just, it's almost like comedy. It's like black comedy some days, some of the crap that you see in the news. And what's the frustrating to me, and I have to be careful of this because I am, you know, my main focus is our side. You know, the left is the left. You know, you've got the leftist voters, you got the knuckleheads that don't have a clue about the economy and think that there's trillions of dollars that should be paying for everything. You got a whole new generation that's, you know, kind of clueless. I think they're starting to wake up. You know, and we always have. You know, the left has always been there, and it's been there for a long time, has a lot of power, has embedded itself in many institutes of government and our educational system, and that's a given. You know, and so, you know, you can spend your days, Obama this, Obama that, you know, posting articles all day long about Obama. And really, the only reason Obama gets away with what he gets away with is because you got a bunch of rhinos in the House and the Senate who act like Democrats and give him everything he wants. You know, they bitch and they moan and they act like conservatives when they're talking to us. And then they turn around and they set up legislation and do some insider moves, and then they hand him what he wants. You know, it's just like with the whole debt ceiling thing that we just went through and the Obamacare, you know, defund or delay that was going on. You know, they folded again and again and again and again. And that's what we're battling, and that's, I think, what our main focus is to help people, you know, sift through the noise and haste, focus on the things that matter, and understand who the enemy really is. Because I would rather face an enemy in front of me, knowing that person is an enemy, knowing that they are out to get me, than to face an enemy inside my own rank or inside my tent when I'm sleeping at night. And that's the challenge I think that people really are not getting, is they don't understand how bad these rhinos are. And we could, I mean, you know, you want the details. You got to go get it for yourself. Look at their voting record. You can go to, you know, the House and Senate voting, and you can see everything they've ever voted on. And just look at their voting records, and you can also, there's websites that do analysis of their whole voting dynamics and tell you where they rate on, you know, constitutional issues. And when you look at some of these guys with 30%, and they're the leadership, they're leading your party. You know, they have a worse voting record than a Democrat did 15 years ago. This reality has to be gotten out to the public, because you got to learn to vote for the right people. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line, because otherwise, why? Just go vote Democrat. Give them all the power. Let them destroy the country quicker so we can reset, because there's no future in socialism. There's no future in the left's vision for America. Europe is falling. That was the vision of the left. It is folding. And you won't hear this crap in the news. You got to go research it. It is collapsing. Okay? So here's where we're at. You know, starting of another show. Hopefully getting across some really simple things you can get your mind wrapped around and focus on. You know, not how many freaking generals have been fired, like, oh, okay, that was a really neat fact, you know, that keeps going around and around and around the internet, and you're like, well, whatever. I mean, what the hell can I do about it? But I can get you to understand how to vote properly and get off your butt in 2014 and get people to go down and vote with you. Midterms are terrible. You know, 30-35% of the population comes out and votes, and yet they'll come out in 50-55% over one president, one branch of the government, when really the midterms, like 2010 with the Tea Party surge, are the most important, yet you can hardly get 35% of the people off their butts. That's frustrating to me, Rex. So,
yeah, well, it is frustrating because – you know, we thought this was a constitutional republic, and we thought that there were two parties, the liberals and the conservatives, when in fact that is just not the case. The only two parties there are the corporatist statist elites and we, the people. Yet they got us squibbling with each other about, you know, petty little issues, I'm a leftist, I'm a rightist, blah, 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 instead of actually realizing that most of the problems that are going on right now are not partisan. I mean, the false left-right paradigm thing is crap anyway, but these issues aren't even partisan. This is just a disaster of epic proportions that's going to screw everybody, and unless people start working together, we're screwed. I think your point was very valid. Stop focusing on the news that the corporate media feeds you to keep you divided and keep you distracted, and focus on those things about which you can actually do something. And that's the key. And I think that Ted Cruz and Mike Lee showed what that is. In the in the government funding fight, they led that website, don'tfundit.com. They got 2.some million signatures. We did four shows about it in September. Should have been, but the idea is that the only reason that they got as far as they did, even though it's called a colossal failure, monumental failure, whatever, it was only a failure because the GOP rhino leadership made it a failure. But the success, the success was that they got as far as they did, not only because men like Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Justin Amash and Trey Gowdy stand on principle, conservative principles, but because they had a tsunami of grassroots support hammering the hell out of all of the other congressmen and senators that gave them that edge. And you need to do more of that. The fact is that what they tried to do, which was initially repeal this thing, then defund it, and then they were willing to compromise on delaying it a year, has proven to be exactly what should have been done, because this thing is an absolute disaster. Now, you mentioned conservative principles. You mentioned conservative principles. We did a show on that, going over Russell Kirk's 10 principles of conservatism, and we got through, I think, one and a half of them. We'll do more of those, and we'll announce it. Remember, you can hear that show. You can share that show. You can tweet that show. You can get an MP3 anytime. Just go to Blog Talk Radio, find Liberty's Thunder on Blog Talk Radio, and scroll down our page, and all of our shows, the former Texan Rec shows and all the Liberty's Thunder shows we've done, are right there. You can listen in your browser. You can listen in your mobile device. And if you go below the scrolling graphics, there's a download link. Right-click on that, and you can get an MP3. You can email that to people. You can play it in your MP3-enabled device. You can download it, burn a CD, take it to your Tea Party meetings, Campaign for Liberty meetings, Republican Party meetings, AA meetings, whatever meetings you go to, you take it, you give it to people. And you remember that when you share the show, Liberty's Thunder, formerly the Texan Rec Show, with people, you're not endorsing Chris or I. You're not necessarily endorsing our views. What you're simply trying to do is get people to wake up. And the number one question you have to ask yourself, okay, because you got to think for yourself, but you got to get the information from the right places as opposed to being fed the information by the corporate media and the Washington, D.C. spin machine, which pretends that there's a fight going on in D.C., when in fact they're all holding hands and singing Kumbaya and screwing you. Okay, the question you have to ask yourself every day, what did I do today for the cause of liberty, for the love of country, and for advancing conservative, authentic conservative principles? What did I do today? Did you share an article from the Huffington Post about Obama? Did you share something from Rand Paul on the Washington Post? I mean, that's nice, but that did that really do something? The question you have to ask yourself is, did I get at least three people who were formerly either confused or uninvolved to take action? Whether that action is to call the Speaker of the House or the Minority Leader of the Senate and tell them, for example, audit the Fed. Did you call this week and tell anybody, your representative or someone else's representative, or get three other people to do it, to call and say, don't confirm Janet Yellen as the next head dick of the Federal Reserve without an audit the Fed bill? Did you do that? Because if you haven't done that, then you're missing the point, because the Fed is at the root of this problem. As long as the Fed is printing and fabricating money and sending it to the corporatist assholes in Washington, D.C., they're going to keep playing this duopoly game. They're going to keep expanding the state. They're going to keep putting their hand deeper and deeper in your pocket, and they're going to be telling you what kind of light bulb you can have, how much toilet water you can have in your toilet, what you're allowed to flush out of your toilet. They're going to tell you that you can or can't to collect rainwater on your property, what your kids can learn in school, what you can put in your body. It's insane. It's just literally insane, but you've got to stop it. So what did you do today? Did you go to the Texan Rec Show page on Facebook? Not the Texan Rec Show page, even though it still says that, because Facebook won't change it. It's Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, and if Facebook doesn't change it this week, I'm just going to set up a new page. So we'll inform you of that when it happens. Right. Hopefully they'll change it. But go there and like the page. That way you'll get notifications of when we're broadcasting, which is normally 10 p.m. Eastern on Sunday nights. But sometimes I get a hair up my ass and decide to tell Chris, hey, we're going to do one on Thursday night. Because often it's difficult to get all this stuff jammed into two and a half hours once a week, because sometimes the stuff is coming at such a fast pace, you got to decipher it all. And then sometimes we got to just step outside of the box and do something not related to the news and take a look at what is a conservative? What is a libertarian? What do they have in common? How do we work together? Who are the candidates we should support? Yeah, who are the candidates we should support? And remember something, just because you support a candidate doesn't mean you like their personality, doesn't mean you like everything they stand for. What it means is that you believe that this is somebody who, based on their record and what they stand for, is actually going to move the ball in the right direction. And that could be very divergent people. It could be people as different as Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul. It could be as different as Rand Paul and Daryl Issa or Justin Amash and Ted Cruz. But there are some broad principles upon which they agree. You got to figure those out. You got to figure out who to support, and you got to work to get them to do that. And the most important thing is, because you're listening to the show, you're already grassroots, you're already involved, is get other people to do it. There are so many people out there who vote Republican who never bother to check if their Republican is a conservative or an asshole. Furthermore, in the last election, Chris, was it like, 114 million people didn't vote?
Yeah, it was some ridiculous figure like that. I'll pull
that file
up in case we access it. I'm watching American Idol. I mean, I was just messing around with, remember I sent you that link to that violinist? 80 million views. 80 million freaking views for a violin player. You know, she's really good, and she's very inspiring, and she's come from nowhere and done Halo and Game of Thrones, and it's just, it's cool. The American success story inspires me. I have to admit, I don't usually watch the whole season of, like, you know, those kind of shows, but I really like to go online and watch the auditions. You know what I mean? Because that's the spirit of people, you know, trying to chase their dream down. So I do enjoy that. I hardly ever watch the seasons, but I sure like to go back and watch that. But 80 million views for one frickin' video. And you know what? It didn't change your life. it's frustrating to me because I mean, honestly, we talk about this. I don't know if we talk about it all the time, but it comes up every so often. Our viewership should be millions of people by now. And you know, the whole concept of internet, you know, of social media, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is about people going, wow, I got that. What a great message. And, yeah, they're a couple jerks, but, man, they have a great message. And, you know, I need to get people to listen to this because I can't, you know, I don't spend as much time as they do, you know, learning how to articulate this stuff. So, you know, they're bringing points together and it helped me. So now I got to go get 10 people. I mean, that's what viral is all about. I've done this in business most of my life. I've done it in nonprofit organizations. I've done it, you know, in many different facets of my life. You know, this is what, it's what building a church is about. You know, you're not going out and opening a, you know, a mainstream media ad to build a church. It's people being touched by a message, not the messenger. Unfortunately, in America, we're really into the messenger, you know, and maybe we could tune up the way we talk or play really, you know, different music or whatever, and we'd have more people go, oh, wow, I really like the messenger. I'm not sure I want to be liked. I just want to impact people's lives. My country is
I just want to be left alone.
Hell. Yeah, really, I really don't want to do this, to be honest with you. But I my country's falling apart. You know, when I look at, you know, we have so many different, you know, directions we could go. You know, when we talk about the TPP, you know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, people don't even know what the hell it's about. They don't even understand this trade deal that's being put together. They don't, you know, you look at what the UK or Ukraine just told the UN, the EU to bug off, and they realigned with Russia. And people don't even understand what that means. But when you look at it from economics, from a worldview, from what's going on in Europe, how the EU is crashing, socialism, the barbarianism of, you know, the godless state of Europe, that countries are going, wow, man, that's not really the direction we, you know, you guys are like really cool, but, you know, you're falling apart. And I don't really want my culture to disintegrate into this hellhole that has been created by Europe. And they're starting to move back to more traditional, going, where's it safe? You know, where are our original traditions and beliefs and ideas? And you're seeing these waves, you know, start to transition around the world. But if you don't study this crap, you're like, where's Ukraine? I mean, how many people could even tell you on a map where the Ukraine is? But it's a huge issue.
I saw a crane on the highway a little while ago.
Yeah, cranes are cool, actually. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, there's just so many different directions. You know, like the Fed. I mean, how many people understand the Fed is a private bank, that this country almost went through a second revolution over central banking. They built one and put it out of business, built another one. Jackson came in and put it out of business and paid off, and actually the first president to pay off the national debt. Can you fathom somebody having enough gonads to actually shut down the Fed and pay off $17 trillion debt and fix our economy? I mean, you know,
they tried to kill him twice.
Yeah, really.
They tried to kill him twice over that one.
Actually, they killed a bunch of them that were interested in not having a private bank control our economy. It's unconstitutional, but there it is. You know, like so many things in our country. So, you know, you look at these things. I mean, people, you know, like to point at Russia, and they want to make Russia the great, you know, communist enemy again and bring back the Cold War. They got a 9% debt-to-GDP ratio. Can you imagine America right now, in your life right now, how it would impact your economy, your income, your ideas, launching businesses, if we had a 9% debt ratio instead of 100%? And that doesn't even include unfunded liabilities, because now you're getting into $100 trillion. But just the $17 trillion, which is about 100%, you know, of our economy, if those economic facts are correct, you know what I mean, if they're not fudging those numbers. They play with numbers all the time.
Well, they're fudging them.
But you can only fudge
a trillion by a couple of billion.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, you know, they say our economy is a $17 trillion economy, and I wonder sometimes, you know, if that includes all the money they're printing and paying government workers. You know what I mean? That's what I mean by fudging it. It just gets so convoluted. You know, it gets so convoluted.
I mean,
our economy. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the fact that one out of four Americans is either unemployed or underemployed makes you really wonder, how are we doing $17 trillion, which is what we used to do when we had most people working. And that's really what matters, because what's the point of your gross national product if 25% of the people that live in your country aren't even participating in it because they don't have jobs? I mean, you know, the government's going to fix the economy. I was just saying, they're talking about the government's going to fix the economy. How about stop messing with the economy and let the free market actually create jobs so that these people can get to work and take care of their families? That's what they need to be doing. But instead, what are they doing, Chris?
Not just that, Rex. Not just that. It's how many people are receiving government income, you know, or food stamps or whatever. I mean, and that's being printed. That's not being produced. That's not profits off of corporations or manufacturing.
Right.
That's printed money, borrowed money.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean
to. What are you supposed to do?
What are you supposed to do?
I mean, when they destroy manufacturing and they destroy the job that you had, and then they put this stupid so-called health care law so that you can only get hired for 29 hours a week instead of 40, right?
Oh,
then
my God.
What are you supposed to do to feed your family other than take their hand out? Most people on welfare or food stamps or whatever, they're not there by choice. They're there because their other opportunities have been destroyed by the corporatists, and this is all that's left available to them. Now, most people in this country, and I'm talking about from poor to middle class to wealthy, whatever, most people in this country are not lazy, wanting to suck off the government's teeth for no reason. It's just in some economies, in some localities, there's nothing else. You look at former industrial, very industrious cities like
Chicago.
Buffalo, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Baltimore. Their industry has been decimated to the point where those people don't even have access to a job. They don't have a choice. And that's the fundamental problem.
You know what those cities look like, Rex? You know what those cities look like? Well, they look like those movies after the last, you know, war. I mean, it's terrible. I cannot believe that we have the wealth that we have in this country, the ability to produce, the free market, you know, all the things that we have at our fingertips, and we have whole segments of our society are just devastated. And nobody's going to fix it. I mean, I go back to, you know, I'm an admirer. A lot of people don't like Newt. I admire Newt, and I've studied him. I've listened to him all the way back into the 80s when he used to sit down and have conversations about the economy, about welfare, about where our country was going, you know, some really incredibly deep conversations about what we need to be prepared for, because if we don't turn some of these things, you know, the broken family, the single mother with children, and how that was starting to rear its head, and I remember all this stuff. in the 80s. I remember like, yeah, wow, boy, that's really sad. Oh, wow, that's a problem over there. Well, it ain't a problem over there anymore. It is our whole country now. I mean, it's just crumbling. And when you look at Detroit and that disaster, and you go back to the history of what happened, I mean, Detroit used to be the highest per capita income in the nation. And now it's like a post-tribulation city. And it's just terrible. Well, those people, those Dems, those not just Democrats, these were communists, got a hold of that country. They actually studied Russian communistic platforms for building cities under that rule and came back and applied those principles to that town. And now, you got guts, you know, and you want to really have a thrill ride in your life, you're a thrill seeker, go drive downtown, you know, inner city Detroit without a gun. That'll give you a thrill.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. And we set our homes and our neighborhoods going, oh, that's terrible. No, it's coming to your neighborhood soon because it's crumbling. It is absolutely crumbling. And what these people are doing is on steroids application of the principles that took Detroit to where it is. That's what your government is doing right now. I mean, call me crazy, call me conspiracy.
No,
I can prove every bit of this.
All right, well, you're crazy and you are conspiratorial, but I know you can prove it. But here's grab your tinfoil hats, folks. But here's the crazy thing, right? They've put all these policies in place that have destroyed jobs, destroyed the economy, eliminated the free market, and
forced people dependent
to end up – yeah, and forced people to end up on these programs because they don't have a choice. I mean, and now – so what do they do? Instead of peeling these things back and letting the small business and the Main Street and the manufacturing businesses actually start making stuff that people want to buy so that people will have jobs to make all these things, they instead go full throttle the other way, and they devise a healthcare scheme that gets rid of people's private coverage, and now they're forced to go onto these, you know, so-called exchanges when most people going on there aren't buying even the crappy government-mandated private insurance products. They're just expanding Medicaid. And that's the problem. The more you put on the government handout aspect of it, the more you force people to have no choice but to go to the government for services and benefits, then what you're doing is you are shifting from a private economy to a command economy. And the problem with that, as Margaret Thatcher said, is the problem with socialism is eventually you run out of other people's money. As we move further and further away from free markets and have government do more and more and more, you're going to eventually get to a point where there is no real wealth creation, and therefore the government can't even redistribute it because there's nothing left to distribute. And that's when the collapse happens. And right now, Chris, what they're doing is that they're trying to play this dance game with – remember, for a while there, the talking point was, well, you know that the healthcare law is more than just the website. It's more than just the website. It's not just the website.
Yeah,
right?
You're damn right
now,
it is.
Right? But now they're shifting to get us to focus only on this website because they don't want us to realize how bad the rest of the so-called law is as it's getting rid of people's private coverage. You're talking about so far over 5 million. We're quickly on our way to 10 million. And next year it'll be over 100 million people lose their coverage and be forced to go into these exchanges to either buy a crappy mandated product from connected private insurance companies or expand Medicaid. And today apparently is the golden day that, you know, the website was supposed to finally start working.
Oh, yeah.
I got 2 minutes here from CBS kind of telling you how that's happened. This is obviously from yesterday when apparently it also crashed again. Today, interesting, but here's a little bit from CBS to kind of bring us up to speed on this website, and here's the important aspect of it. I think this website was designed to crash. It was designed to be a boondoggle. It was designed to funnel millions of dollars to Michelle Obama's roommate's company, and then what's going to happen is people are going to be so focused on the failing website that private companies and even the insurance companies themselves are going to put out their own websites which are actually going to work. And everybody's going to say, whew, it's been fixed by the private economy. Well, in a sense, that's true. They fixed the purchasing option, the exchange option, the website interface. But the bad law is still there, and it's still crappy. And don't fall for this thing that, oh, the website's been fixed, everything's hunky-dory now. It's only going to make things worse. But here's 2 minutes from CBS kind of giving the rundown on this so-called healthcare.gov website.
This is no holiday weekend for the people trying to fix healthcare.gov. They are facing a major deadline. The Obama administration promised that by Sunday, December 1st, the Obamacare website will work for most people trying to buy insurance. Cheryl Atkinson is in Washington. Cheryl, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jeff. As you said, the administration said weeks ago that most of the problems with healthcare.gov would be fixed by the end of the month, but the White House is now urging supporters not to immediately push for new enrollments next week. That's because of concerns about capacity.
The team of technicians brought in to fix healthcare.gov did not take a break for Thanksgiving. They worked through the holiday, trying to meet the administration's self-imposed deadline that the website be fixed by December.
By the end of this month, it will be functioning for the majority of people who are using it. They'll be able to shop, see what their choices are.
Remember, on October 1st, the day healthcare.gov launched, only 6 people were able to enroll. As of early November, there were just under 27,000 enrollments through the federal website. The administration has been tempering expectations, warning that problems will continue.
It's a pretty aggressive schedule to get to the entire punch list by the end of November.
White House officials say error rates and wait times are substantially improved, and healthcare.gov can now handle 50,000 people at once. But they worry that a surge of customers beyond that could provoke another round of outages and negative publicity.
They have the right people. The people have confidence that they're going to get it done.
John Engates is Chief Technology Officer for Rackspace Hosting, which specializes in high-capacity e-commerce. Last week, he was one of a half dozen outside technology experts invited to a private White House Situation Room briefing.
If I had to place a bet, I would certainly say that I'm betting that they're going to get it done.
One way to measure the website's performance is the number of people who've been able to enroll, but it'll be a couple more weeks before we have updated numbers. The administration won't release those until mid-December.
That's interesting. They're going to release the updated numbers in mid-December when the deadline for getting a policy, if you don't have one or got booted off yours, has been extended from December 15th to December 23rd, right before Christmas. Yay! And if you don't have coverage by January 1st, guess what?
You get fined.
You're now going to be taxed, fined, taxed, raped, whatever. They're going to screw you. So here's the chaos, right?
Is preparation H part of the Obamacare plan?
No. Preparation H is an over-the-counter drug. It's not covered by the plan, but you can get baby-killing drugs and hard-on medication, and if you need a sex change, that's covered too. So they only cover the really important stuff. Yeah. And Preparation H won't help you because what they're shoving up there is way bigger than anything Preparation H can handle. The simple fact is that it's designed to handle 50,000 users at a time, but they're afraid that a sudden surge of people interested in logging onto this website will cause it to crash. No one's interested in getting on your crappy website. Nobody in this country anymore wants this crap. Even the people that bought into this thing from the beginning realize it's shit. Now, some of them don't like it because they want universal health care, which is a whole different and worse debacle.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, this thing needs to be stopped. Yeah, this needs to be stopped. It is terrible. But, I mean, look, the insanity is that, okay, so let's just say that this website can handle 50,000 people. That doesn't mean that 50,000 people can actually sign up and pay for their coverage. And remember something, unless the insurance company receives a check from you. Now, if you're on Medicaid, that's a whole different issue. But if you're actually buying a private manufactured product that's government mandated and sold through these crappy government exchanges, until you put money down on it, it doesn't exist. If you don't have money down on your policy by December 23rd, come January 1st, you are now subject to fines. Now, they probably won't get around to fining you until April 15th, but you have to have the coverage in place January 1st. That's how bad this is. And next year, you're going to have over 100 million people be in the same boat as the 5 to 10 million are in right now. All this is allegedly designed to cover 32 million people who don't have coverage. And by the way, those 32 million people, they're not the same 32 million people every month. It changes. You know, last month I was 18. I was 17. Now I'm 18 years old, and I'm going to college, and I'm not on my parents' health plan anymore. Oh, guess what? You can buy one at school. Or perhaps I'm switching jobs, right? So I left my old plan at the other job. COBRA cost 2.5 times the premium, and I'm pretty healthy, and I got coverage at my new employer next month. So for this month, I'm uninsured. You know, so it goes around and around and around. So it's not the same 32 million people. People with pre-existing conditions are excluded by insurance. It sucks for them. Even, you know, a lot of us are in that boat. But the simple fact is that there are other ways to manage creating these high-risk pools on a state-by-state level to give people access to insurance or coverage or health care. This isn't doing it. It's making the problem worse. Go ahead.
Well, and this is the thing. You know, I keep hearing this crap on the news and the media, and including the talking heads that come on, you know, from the left on the faux news. And they talk about, well, the Republicans didn't have any ideas, and the system was broken. No, the Republicans had a ton of ideas. And the thing is they got shot down because you had a majority-controlled Democrat House and Senate. And when they shoved this thing through, and Harry Reid did, like, his nuclear option and got Obamacare passed with no Republican support at all because they had ideas. And there are ideas. This country has succeeded and grown and become the most, well, used to be, the most prosperous country per capita on the face of the earth, you know, without the Marxists being in charge of our government and shoving these programs down our throat. Let's just take Medicaid or Medicare. $35 trillion of unfunded liability. Okay, let me repeat that for the hard of hearing. $35 trillion of unfunded liability.
Carry the one, and that's more money than we got.
Yeah, no shit. It's double the size of our economy. So if everybody just turns in all their money, we're still halfway to paying off Medicaid. That's one government program. Socialism does not work. The only reason that European socialism grew at the rate it grew at was the fact that America was the damn army and military of the world. We spent all the damn money, so Europe, when it rebuilt itself after the Second World War, had a lot of prosperity, and then they started experimenting in all these wonderful programs to, you know, let's give everything to all these our citizens and make it all wonderful and go down this new revisionist. Basically, it was communism in a revisionist fashion. Okay, now the only reason we have socialism in America and it's failing, which is just mind-boggling to me, how people don't understand this, especially all these young college-educated kids, you know, who are out there, you know, it's just mind-boggling some days. But the only reason socialism works in America is they print money and they borrow money. Now, I don't know what any human being that you would sit down and have a discussion with and saying, look, I can't pay my bills. Oh, well, you need to go borrow more money. You need to let's go get you some more loans. You know, I mean, any financial, basic fundamental financial advisor is going to say, you need to quit spending. And that means
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. Most of those financial advisors are corporatist socialists.
Yeah, no, but you know what I'm saying. As a basic theology.
No, you're right. A 4-year-old could tell you that. If you've got $1,000 coming in and you're spending $1,100, you got a $100 shortfall. It's just that simple.
I love that clip. We'll put her in charge.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing. This thing's not fixable. All right. Now, Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and a whole bunch of us worked our asses off before the, you know, funding fight with the continuing resolutions and all that BS in October. We're saying, you know, repeal it. No, we're not going to do that. Defund it. No, we're not going to do that. All right. How about we just delay it? Can we just delay it until we figure out how bad it is and maybe try to fix it? Well, now they've pushed it so far they didn't listen. And by the way, the only reason that Obamacare got funded, it had nothing to do with Obama and it had nothing to do with Harry Reid. It had everything to do with Johnny Boehner, little Eric Cantnot, Mitch McConnell. Bob Corker, and all those other, you know, pricks in the Rhino Surrender Caucus. They're the ones that made this happen. Now, the crazy thing is now it's so bad it's not fixable. Here's Ted Cruz talking about how it's not fixable. Unfortunately, it's on Fox and Fools, on Fox Noise, but it's still pretty good because Ted Cruz is awesome at explaining this. He's very good at explaining this succinctly and clearly. It's about 3 minutes long. Here's Ted Cruz talking about why this so-called Obamacare thing is unfixable.
All right, here we go. New this morning, the White House breaking yet another promise when it comes to Obamacare.
Yep, this time admitting the website apparently won't be ready by the end of November, as has been promised.
And you combine that with these sobering stats. On the day the healthcare website debuted, only 6 people were able to sign up, and only 50,000 have enrolled as of last week, according to the Wall Street Journal.
Maybe even less.
Yeah, with stories like that making headlines across the country, do the American people even want Obamacare anymore? Joining us now to discuss is Senator Ted Cruz, certainly someone who's been vocal about it. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. It's great to join you.
Thank you.
You know, a lot of questions today are going to be coming across on the Hill, certainly with the rollout of Obamacare. But what's the end game here? I mean, some people say, let this thing die, let it suffocate, and the truth will come out. And other people say, let's fight it bit by bit. What's the new strategy here?
Well, look, the problem is it's falling apart, but as it's falling apart, millions of Americans are hurting. We're now up to roughly 5 million people who've lost their health insurance because of Obamacare. And I got to tell you, Elizabeth, when you travel the state of Texas as I do and you meet people across the state who've gotten one of those letters, who've lost their health insurance, these are people with, you know, children with diabetes, with serious health issues, and they're just scared. And at this point, it's clear Obamacare isn't working, and I think Congress needs to step in. We need to show real leadership and fix the problem that Congress created. We need to stop Obamacare.
Well, you mean stop it or fix it? Is it fixable?
See, I don't think it's fixable. The White House is coming in with all of these fixes and little bells and whistles, but they're not going to work. It is fundamentally flawed. And you know, I got to say, at this point, in my view, stopping Obamacare is the essence of pragmatism. 3.5 years ago, it might have been possible for reasonable minds to differ. There might have been some who would have said, well, maybe this thing will work. Let's give it a try. Today, nobody's saying that. Nobody can defend it because millions of people are losing their jobs or in part-time work.
Right.
Their premiums are skyrocketing, and they're getting their health insurance canceled. We need to stop it and start over because it isn't working.
Yeah, another million people got canceled in California yesterday. Senator, you know, I know your side is united in getting rid of this thing, and now there are so many voices from the Democrat side. I'm curious, why did Bill Clinton pick yesterday to come out and take the president to the woodshed and tell him to honor his commitment?
Well, that was certainly revealing, and it suggests perhaps that Hillary Clinton is looking to run away from President Obama and run away from Obamacare. And that ought to be a signal to Democrats, this thing isn't working. And when President Obama and the Democrats keep fighting in a partisan way for a law that is taking away the health care from millions of people, more people lost their health insurance because of Obamacare than have been able to sign up for it, that should be a real signal that we ought to get some bipartisan cooperation to come in and say, listen, it's not working. Let's start over.
Wow. Well, I guess you want me to talk? All right. Am I on off the mute?
No, someone has to talk.
Sorry. I was scrolling for an article. Sorry.
It's radio. If no one's talking, then people can't follow.
Well, it went quiet, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, crap, he probably wants me to talk. You know, what he's saying is true. And the part that's really frustrating to me, and I hope more and more and more Americans are getting this, when you have an economic crash like we did in 2008, you don't destroy the economy. You don't enact government programs that take over a fifth of the economy or a sixth of the economy, whatever you want to argue in that point. And you don't enact insanity. There's one thing you do, and not to overemphasize the Reagan era, but there's one thing you do. You cut taxes, you cut regulations, and you tell business people, you know, grow. We're behind you. Hire. We will help you. I mean, come on. There's nothing difficult about any of this stuff, Rex. It's so frustrating to see these programs. You know, we've raised the debt ceiling multiple times. We're printing $1.2 trillion a year, okay? And we're borrowing $1 trillion a year. We're up to $17+ trillion. The Fed has a balance sheet on the U.S., almost $4 trillion that we know of because we can't audit the damn thing. You know what I'm saying? They printed $16 trillion and shipped it overseas to monetize the debt and to export our inflation. And people don't even understand this stuff. Every move they've done is exactly the opposite of what you would do if you wanted a person like you, you know, free enterprise people like us, to go out and expand our businesses and hire more people and start a new business. I mean, I've got 10 ideas in my mind, and I ain't going to do crap. You know, why would I go out to fail? You know, if a government, you know, and I heard a video earlier tonight, and it was really great. But, I don't remember when the heck it was. But it was great dialogue talking about regulations and the power of the EPA and all these different, you know, the three-digit or the three-letter organizations.
The alphabet.
The power of no. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They have the power to come in and say, you can't do that. You can't develop this land. You can't do this unless you do that. It's this power system that's been built that goes back for decades and decades and decades in this country and are started by both Republicans and Democrats, people. You need to understand this stuff. The EPA, you don't like Agenda 21 and all that stuff? Well, thank Nixon because he started the EPA. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. People need to learn history and OSHA. You need to understand the Department of Education. That was both parties. And a lot of Republicans, you know, who are now going, well, we shouldn't have done that. No shit. Our founding fathers could have told you that in 1780. You know, they built the Articles of, in the Constitution to tell the federal government what you were responsible for, and the rest of it was up to the states. Now, I don't know what people don't understand about. You have a federal government dictating all this crap, taking all your money and taxes, and then going back to the states. Well, and you have a state government. Why in the hell do we have state governments? Why do we have all this duplication of effort? Oh, because
don't give them
that's
any ideas.
What they want. They want it all to They want it all to fall, so you have a centralized authority. Now, does anybody remember the Cold War and Russia, Soviet Russia, and that whole hell of dictatorial powers of centralized governments, of Nazi Germany, of Venezuela? Do we need, history lessons here? This is the direction this country is going. And if it doesn't turn around, if we don't get control, and we can talk about Obamacare, we can talk about whatever, NSA, all these different all these different issues, all right, all day long.
No, they are conspiracies.
Really, but if you don't have a sound economy, none of this shit's going to matter. And we do not have a sound economy. We do not have a sound economic system. We don't even have real money anymore. We have currency.
We haven't had it for 100 years. We haven't had it for 100 years.
We don't have gold backing anything, thanks to a Republican.
Yep.
I mean, come on. Yeah. These
are Republican
bill.
Issues.
Yeah, no kidding.
Senator Aldrich was a Republican.
Yeah, all back in the Fed era. You're dang right he was.
Yeah. Yeah, here's
Jekyll
the crazy
Island. What a perfect name. You know what I mean?
Yeah, to Mr. Jekyll. It is a conspiracy. They did conspire to do it, but just because it's a conspiracy doesn't mean it's not real. See, we use the word conspiracy theory to dispel anything and everything. The fact is that some conspiracy theories are real, and so you said, they do these things, and then you wonder why it's not working. Well, you can only make numerous errors trending in the same direction for so long before someone has to realize that it's obviously intentional. I mean, some policies don't work. I mean, you look at a guy like Newt Gingrich, for example. He's throwing out ideas a mile a minute. Some of them work, some of them don't work, and he knows that, and he discards some ideas and grabs new ones.
He's always shifting.
But
he's moving.
Yeah, but if you keep throwing out bad ideas that keep going in the same inevitable direction, then clearly something other than an experiment or a notion is at work here. It's obviously an intentional move in that direction, and the move is to consolidate and control the economy. And remember, to consolidate and control an economy, what you really have to control is people. That's what this is about. What they want is capitalism for themselves and socialism for the rest of us. And that's exactly what you have when you have these, quote, deregulations or re-regulations or new regulations or whatever. The industries that are being managed by this, quote, bill, whatever it is, Dodd-Frank, Obamacare, what have you, write the bill. Their lobbyists descend on Washington, D.C., and tell these congressmen and senators who don't know their head from their ass, this is how it works. sign off on it and vote, here's a check. And then what happens is that it creates a market for their particular products, and when that fails, as bubbles always do, they socialize the losses. And this quantitative easing, this printing of money backed by nothing
at
trillions and trillions of dollars is nothing more than a bailout for Wall Street at the expense of Main Street and every single one of us. And the worst part about it is they do these things and get the support of the people by saying we're regulating the industry, we're going to stop the fraud, and we're going to cut them out from taking advantage of you, and all this kind
of
wonderful stuff. You know, the whole corporatized insurance and medical scheme that this Obamacare thing is, okay, was sold to the American people because they tugged on our heartstrings. We have to take care of those with pre-existing conditions. We have to take care of the poor. Well, who's going to argue with that? I mean, unless you're truly an evil person and you're harboring evil in your heart at a high degree, you're not going to argue with taking care of the genuinely poor and the people who genuinely have pre-existing conditions that exclude them from coverage. That's ridiculous. But the issue is not what is the intention or the stated intention, because no one's going to argue
with
it. The thing is this thing going to accomplish that, or is it going to make things worse? Well, now, and we've been telling you this for 3.5-4 years, that this thing's going to make it worse, and now that it's happening, instead of doubling down and defending the flag that you thought you needed to defend because the thing sounded like a good idea, how about you acknowledge the fact that it's absolutely horrible and you get rid of it? You can't fix this with patchwork. You got to start over again because it is fundamentally unsound, and it's showing that it every single day. Who's at fault? The Republicans. The Republicans are at fault because they actually had opportunities to stop it, and the only time that they pretended to was when it didn't count. But when it counted, when Ted Cruz and Mike Lee made it count, McConnell and Boehner screwed them and screwed you, and frankly, that makes McConnell and Boehner worse enemies to the American people than Obama, Pelosi, and Reid.
Bingo. Yep. Yeah, you're right on. I just want to, you know, we've kind of, not to get off into economics because we kind of hold that to the end, but we've been covering a lot of it because it's important, and I don't think people understand it. But I want to read this quote, and then you can go to your video. Okay, Ron Paul said, since the Fed came into existence, the dollar has lost over 95% of its value. Today, you need $23.70 to buy what $1 in 1913 would purchase. People don't understand what that means, Rex. They don't understand that when you print money and you dump it in the market, you create inflation by devaluing the money. And we've done this periodically off and on through the whole, you know, through the whole last 100 years. But there was always a modicum of control. There was a balance between, you know, the marketplace and you know, letting recoveries happen. You know what I'm saying? You and I both know what I'm talking about. I don't know if the listening audience doesn't. And if you don't, you should learn this stuff because it's important. But what Bush did was he came along and wanted these wars so damn bad. Well, I wouldn't say Bush, but his people, the people that were controlling him, wanted these wars so bad that they ran up like $5 trillion, you know, in debt. And then they had 5 debt ceiling increases. Then we had the crash in 2008. Then Obama comes in, you know, and he basically sells. His whole campaign was everything that Bush did economically, the wars, all that crap was, you know, bad, and that's why you should, you know, hire me. I'm hope and change, which was a total bunch of bull crap because he's intensified everything. Yeah. He's intensified everything. You know, now we're at $17 trillion in debt, and we have a Fed that has never stopped printing money. People don't get this. When you look at TARP, that was a loan, and some of it's come back, some of it hasn't come back yet, and that was only like $400 billion. It was a drop in the bucket, and everybody was really nervous about doing it, and there was a lot of controversy, and it was nothing compared. They're printing $85 billion a month right now, and they're borrowing $1 trillion a year on top of it. So we're dealing with over $2 trillion a year of fake money. Money will never be able to pay back, and all that money that's being dumped into the system is all, when it finally gets out of the upper echelon, you know, the bankers and the Wall Street and the upper areas where all that money's sitting and moves into the market. You ain't seen, when I say 1913 dollar takes 2370 to purchase the same amount of goods, you need to triple that if you understand what's coming. Because there's no physical way you can dump trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars on the market and it not turn into inflation. The only reason we're only seeing inflation about 15-18% right now on basic goods and services, which is not in the CPI, which is the stupidest thing in the world because it's a lie. But when you go to the grocery store, you see it. When you go to the gas pump, you see it. When you go to Home Depot, you see it. Or you go buy clothes, you see that 15 to 20% higher cost, you know, higher price. But what's going to happen is that is nothing when this money finally filters down and when they finally get off of quantitative easing, if they ever do, and they start to have to raise interest rates like you're supposed to do in a normal recovery. You know, there's reasons Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't know if you have to raise interest rates. The market will naturally raise them. The problem is that we are artificially suppressing them. But your point is clearly easily understood.
That's a better way to put it. Yeah.
And I think that you're right. People do need to understand this.
Economics is hard to explain.
Well, it is and it isn't. It's having a fundamental knowledge of it, but our government-controlled so-called educational system keeps people economically illiterate intentionally by design. So you've got to circumvent it, and that includes teaching your kids at younger and younger ages how this is supposed to really work so they can be informed and armed when they get out in the real world. A great source, and we mention it over and over again, is Mises.org. That's Mises.org. That's the Ludwig von Mises Institute. Lots of great resources on there, and we've said it again and again and again, and I've put the links on the Liberty's Thunder show page and also in Liberty's Thunder Militia, the group on Facebook. I put the links in there to Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. Simple, accessible, easy to understand. It's available as a free PDF from Mises. You can buy it from Mises. You can buy it from Amazon. But get that and start working there. Another good source is Ron Paul's and the Fed. And the cool thing about his book is he has a whole bunch of resources listed in the back of his book for you to follow up on. You got to understand this stuff because there is no escaping the economy. It is your responsibility to operate in the economy. But the fundamental problem is not only economic illiteracy, but this utilitarianism that we've acquired that makes us think of human beings only as consumers in the marketplace and where we think of things only in terms of dollars and economic units. And the simplest way to understand what the Fed has done is just notice what used to sell you American-made high-quality goods at a fair price was called the five and dime. Today, it sells you crappy Chinese-made shit for $1 to $5. That's the easiest way to understand what they have done to our money. The five and dimes are now $1 to $5 stores.
Well, here's,
that's how
here's
bad
a
it
little,
is.
Let me throw an example. My granddad, I grew up with a Depression era, you know, grandfather was born in the early 1900s and, you know, started out as a farmer in his early life in Oklahoma, moved to Oregon. And I had that, they were alive for many years of my life. But my granddad used to tell me stories. He said, I used to go down and buy groceries for my whole family for a week. $5. and people just don't get it. They don't understand what inflation is. Inflation is a tax. That's all it is. See, you get all these politicians in power, and they go, oh, we're not going to raise taxes, and the Republicans up until recently, you know, that was their whole platform, no new taxes, you know, and always fight tax increases. Well, what? If they print $2 trillion and dump it on the market and it devalues money by 20%, you just paid 20% more in tax. It's the same damn thing. It's just that what they call inflation, you just accept it going, well, that's just life in America. Well, it wasn't life in America for a long time. And it's not
and it's
supposed
invisible.
To be. It's invisible until you go down and swipe your card. You know, and your income, what you know these figures better than I do, but real income has not changed since, what, the 80s, you said?
No, 1971.
1971,
that was the peak in real wages. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was a professor at a technical college. He's a nuclear physicist. He made $5,800 a year, had summers off, went to college, paid for it. My mom didn't work, even though she had double master's degrees, didn't work.
You was a kid, I'm sure she worked.
Children. But you know what I mean, didn't have a career at that point in time because she had three young boys. We lived in a big-ass two-story house, 2,800-square-foot house on the side of a mountain that had a visual range from Three Sisters in Oregon, which is central Oregon, all the way down to Mount Shasta. We had a trailer, we had a boat, we had cars, we went on vacation. He took summers off, finished his master's degree. He made $5,800 a year, Rex. His second house was $17,000.
And
when
real money
you tell people this stuff, yeah, but when you tell people this stuff, the late 60s, when you tell people this stuff, they go, oh, yeah, but it's different. Why is it different? That's what you need to understand, because if you don't understand this stuff, you think 2008 was bad, wait until the next correction hits. And I'm not trying to scare people. I'm just trying to get people to understand that, you know, besides posting Obama stories of the day, you need to learn about this stuff, because this is the most important part of your political dialogue that nobody is talking about. That's what's so frustrating.
Yeah, and
Fox won't talk about you know?
Of course they won't, because they're owned by these people that are perpetrating this thing. Now, here's the real reason why this is important, and Chris is just right on mark here. The economic issue is very important to understand. Because if you don't understand it, then you won't put value, and you won't be able to get others to put value on taking action where you can actually have an impact, such as calling the House and the Senate and telling them to audit the Fed. Now, some people will say, well, what's the point of auditing it? We should just abolish it. You're absolutely right. It needs to be abolished.
Yeah,
but until it is audited, there will be no impetus to abolish it. So you've got to find out how much they've been stealing and all the illegal stuff they've been doing and expose it so that so many people know about it that it'll be impossible for Congress not to act. The same thing that happened with Obamacare, where people were calling and calling and tweeting and emailing
Syria.
And getting on it and signing the petition, and the same thing that happened with Syria, the same thing that happened with the gun registration. They have to respond when the numbers are overwhelming. If there's only 3% of us out here screaming our heads off, will be ignored. But if it's 30, 40% screaming about something, they have to respond. So find out about audit the Fed bill.
Respond.
Well, exactly. I mean, 2 million people got them to do the whole Obamacare thing, but we need bigger numbers. And that's why you have to ask yourself every day, what did I do today to further the conservative cause of liberty, and how many people did I get involved that weren't involved before? Talking to the same group of people in the same group on Facebook, that doesn't really help. You got to get other people who aren't involved to do it. And the most important thing to understand is that it's not only an issue of economic survival and restoring the republic. It is also a question of morality, because you can't be neutral. Either you are fighting for truth and liberty, or you're part of the problem. It's just that simple. There is no sitting on the fence. And it's interesting to me. Chris, you found this clip. Dinesh D'Souza, who was, I believe, in the Reagan White House. I don't always agree with him, but sometimes he makes some really good, succinct remarks. Here he is talking about Obamacare at some forum, and he was asked a question. And this is important for you Christians, whether nominal or full faith or whatever it is, you identify as a Christian, which is most of this country, who tend to view things from that perspective, and the government knows that. So they cover these things in Christian language to get you to have to get behind it or feel guilty about not getting behind it. So this whole Obamacare thing was about taking care of the poor. So if you weren't in support of it, obviously you hate the poor. Well, that's not true.
Bullshit.
That's not true, because the issue is not do we or do we not take care of the poor. It is a moral responsibility to take care of those who are truly indigent. But how do you do it? And what means do you do it? And what level of involvement does the government have is key. Now, I think Dinesh does a pretty good job of answering the question. Here's about almost 5 minutes, and we'll comment on the other side.
And
we're running out of time. We only have 40.
Before you started, I want to add something to this. This is not just about Obamacare. This is a whole philosophical argument about the difference between free market, you know, God-fearing people living in a country everybody helping everybody versus centralized government with a gun telling you I'm taking from you to give to somebody else. That's really what this is about. Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's fine. It's a good point. This is about almost 5 minutes long, and we've got about 45 minutes of live air left. There's a bunch of you listening live, and we're probably going to run into overtime, although I don't want to stay here too long. But at midnight Eastern, 45 minutes from now, Blog Talk Radio is going to cut you off on your browser and your mobile device. The only way you can listen live is to call in on the phone. I won't put you on the air, so don't freak out about that, but you'll listen in your phone. The number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. Otherwise, you have to catch it in archive, and all of our shows are available in archive. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder, scroll down, click the link, and it'll play right there in your browser.
I want to promote the call. Hold on, because we really, our last 10, 15, 20 minutes is the best part of our show. So I want to recommend that you call in. Go ahead.
All right, here we go. This is Dinesh D'Souza, No to Obamacare.
In my understanding of Christ's teachings, taking care of the poor and the sick were of the utmost importance, and so I was hoping both of you could talk about why you don't think that universal health care is a very important issue to Christians these days. Thank you.
Wow, universal health care. Well, it depends what you mean by take care of the health of everybody. Yes, of course, we're all in favor of that. Everybody should have health insurance. Insurance goes back centuries, the idea. It's a great idea. The question is, who should pay for it? How should this be paid for? What's the most efficient way to make sure everybody gets that coverage? And that's just, I think that's more of a political issue than a Christian religion moral issue.
Yeah, I think there's also the question of, I think the question is often ignored in these contexts is that whenever the government is involved, there's an element of compulsion.
Yes.
And the effect of compulsion is always to strip the virtue out of a transaction. If, Michael, if you and I are walking on the beach and I'm hungry and you have a sandwich, and I say, Michael, I'm hungry, give me your sandwich. And you say, yes, here it is. I say, thank you. Now, that's a moral transaction. You feel good about having done something good. I feel a sense of obligation. Maybe someday if I'm doing well, I'll share my sandwich with somebody else. But now here's a third situation. You and I are walking on that same riverbank. I'm hungry. You have a sandwich. And here comes Obama on a horse. He gets off the horse, puts a gun to your head, and says, Michael, turn over the sandwich to Dinesh. And so you do. And then he puts his gun back and he drives away. Now, the outcome is the same. I mean, I have the sandwich. But the moral content of that transaction is completely different. You deserve no moral credit. You didn't give willingly. I don't even feel a sense of gratitude. I feel a sense of entitlement. I feel that you actually owe me 7 sandwiches, but you only gave me 1. So you can see how the whole thing is confused when you bring in the element of coercion.
Indeed. You began with humans are bent or inherently morally imperfect. In the sandwich reference, you presumably believe that Obama should not hold the metaphorical gun to Sherman's head, that he will share that sandwich freely. If humans are not inherently moral, how is this a valid expectation, and why should Obama not hold the gun to Sherman's head, so to speak?
Mr. D'Souza?
Because the guy holding the gun is no better than the guy to whose head he's holding it to. So in other words, sure, Michael Shermer may be a selfish guy who wants to keep his sandwich. But nevertheless, let's consider the motives of the guy with the gun. Is he contributing his own sandwich? No. He's taking Michael Shermer's sandwich and giving it to someone else and then proclaiming himself to be a morally wonderful human being. Look, I'm not denying the core principle involved here, right? I'm simply saying that here we are as a country, and for 2 centuries we've had people pulling the wagon. And we recognize, and I would agree, that there is a group of people, and you can disagree about how many, but I would say about 10% of people who are weak and disadvantaged and need to sit in the wagon and have the rest of us pull that wagon. Okay?
Now, again, you can disagree about how many people should be in the wagon, but that number of people has been increasing considerably. This was kind of what Romney's getting at, that at some point there are more people in the wagon than there are pulling. And then people who are pulling begin to think, well, maybe I should stop pulling and get in the wagon. It's kind of nicer in the wagon. And what my criticism of Obama is, instead of saying, listen, I really want to thank the people who are pulling the wagon, he goes, the people who are pulling the wagon are greedy, selfish, and materialistic, and the people sitting in the wagon are wonderful. He is morally demonizing the wagon pullers and championing the superior morality of the guys who are sitting in there. And all I'm saying is this is an inverted morality. The guys who are actually contributing to help the disadvantaged, these are the sacrificial people of our society, and they're the ones who deserve a little more credit.
Well, there it is.
Oh, man.
About Obamacare.
Yeah.
And it's not just Obamacare.
No, this is the deepest conversation in our culture, and we've had this argument for years. The problem is you have this factor of the difference between the compassion of helping people, which Americans, I will argue, are the greatest giving culture in the history of the world. And we give more money, time, resources, you know, charities. And yet, for the last 50 years, the Democrats and the left and the commies in the left have created this whole dialogue about how selfish we are and we don't give enough and look at all these poor people while they make them and continue to make more and more and more of them, because you get people locked into these. Anybody who's ever studied government programs or welfare programs know that one of the biggest flaws of the whole system is there's no transition point. In other words, you hit a certain income, you try to go out there and improve your life, but you hit a certain point where you're just starting to lift above poverty. As soon as you go 0.1 cents over, you're off the damn program, you start losing everything. And so it incentivizes people to stay on these programs. And I remember the conversations, because this was a big study in my life, but I remember the conversations about people going, you know, we got three generations now who don't even know how, they can't even equate work to money. You know, and you're going, this is not helping people. And that's the argument, the moral argument that the right has had for years. But we're losing that argument because they don't argue it right, number one. Number two, they don't own the media. 97% of the media is a bunch of libs who, for lack of a better term right now, I can't, there are days when I'm just shocked going, they just want to destroy it. I can't think of where are they going with this thing, because it never works, never has worked. There's all the evidence in the world that if you socialize and you incentivize people not to perform, that pretty soon the performers go somewhere else or they quit performing. Well, in this case, in America, since the 80s and the early 90s, you know, corporations have been leaving America, you know, and there are more and more and more people going, why would I want to be here? I can go somewhere else with governments treat me better. You know, we have the highest tax on corporations, and I don't want to make any excuses for corporatism. I'm a free enterpriser. I believe in capitalism. I believe in free markets. We haven't had free markets in a long time. When you look at the government and you look at the Bush era and the Obama era and all this printed money and borrowed money and all this Wall Street crap, they're both doing it. But that is not free enterprise. That's corporatism. That's fascism. If you look at it from that historical precedence, that is not, you know, me starting a business and building it up and burning 100 hours a week to build it up and spending 2 years of my life with no income until I finally get it to where I'm profitable enough and then expanding. That's free enterprise. This crap they're doing, you know, where you live, that ain't free enterprise. That's fascism. That's where corporations go to the government, get laws passed where you have to buy this light bulb, this toilet, this product, this car, and they force you as a consumer to work your butt off while they're devaluing the money by printing and borrowing, and then you're forced to buy. That's not free enterprise. And for some reason, the left is really good at making free enterprise in the same conversation as they are this corporatist fascist crap. And that's where the dialogue needs to change, where people need to get better educated on economic issues. I'm done. Go ahead.
Well, no, and that, you hit a fundamental problem. Okay, the fundamental problem is, and it's not this kind of, you know, 15-year-old adolescent view of Ayn Rand of, you know, Atlas Shrugs, okay, but it is just basic anthropology, an understanding of human nature. We might aspire to be selfless and charitable, but we are inherently selfish. We look out for ourselves, and that's the paradigm in which we have to work. So if people are disincentivized from garnering a profit by serving more people, then you're going to lose that industrious drive of wealth production, which lifts all ships. And so the real key understanding here is when you make sitting in the wagon more attractive than pulling the wagon, more and more people are going to get in that wagon. The problem is that may not, I mean, not only that won't work, eventually you're going to have way too much weight in the wagon and not enough people pulling it, and it's going to collapse, and you're not going to end up moving anywhere, which is where we're heading. But the only way you incentivize that is to let people keep the product of their own labor. We saw this as a prime example with the fifth Thanksgiving feast in North America, which was in Plymouth Colony, where they had kind of a communist setup where, you know, everybody shared in all resources. And so people were like, well, crap, if I'm going to have to share in these resources, then I'm not going to put in as much in the pie so I can get more out of the pie. And it started to collapse. Yeah. Then they went to a private property system, and all of a sudden they had a bounty. So the real key understanding here is that people need incentives. So, for example, if you're an engineer who's earning $60,000 a year and taking care of your family, and then you get laid off, and you start collecting unemployment, and you're only collecting, you know, $35,000 a year, you go, wow, that's a pretty big shortfall from what I was making before. But then you realize, well, now I'm home taking care of my kids, so I don't have to pay for daycare, and my wife still has her job, so we still got health coverage through work. So I could go out and look for a job, but there's a diminishing marginal utility in doing that because I really haven't lost $25,000 of income. I've only lost about $7,000, and, you know, we can just trim the edges a little bit and we can get by on that. So I have no incentive to go out and get another engineering job. I might as well just stay home and collect unemployment. And so we're disincentivizing people from going out to get work. And so what happens is now there's less productive economy, and we are redistributing wealth out of the productive economy through the government to these people. And the problem is that it's not these people who are the problem. They're just doing an economic calculus that makes sense. The problem is the state itself and the bureaucracy, instead of helping people get out from the problems that they're in temporarily and become productive and feel good about themselves and take care of their families and contribute to the general economy, they create clients for themselves. And the only way they justify their high salaries and their overpaid jobs is to have more and more poor people to service. And now we're expanding Medicaid, which is, as Chris said earlier, is $35 trillion in the hole already. Well, the people that are administering this are like, hey, great, we've got more customers. And these Obamacare exchanges are basically forcing us to buy overpriced, crappy insurance products from private companies. So it's all about consolidation of power and control of economics, which means control of people. The reason you have to understand this is because it is the only way you're going to be able to sift through the rhetoric of the politicians and their proposed bills and the actual intentions. Yep. And then you've got to do something about it. So knowing all this, knowing about the printing of the money and the disincentivization and putting more people in the wagon than pulling the wagon, the question you have to ask yourself is, did I do something this week to get the Fed audited? Did I do something this week to get three, four, or five people who otherwise know nothing to understand how this works, why it's important to their lives, and which of the elected people are actually doing something about it, and which are actually adding to the problem? See, most people think, well, the Republicans are obviously for business, and the Democrats are obviously for the poor. Well, that's not true. Republicans are not for business. They're for big corporations. And Democrats are not for the poor. They're for buying more voters. If you really want to help the poor and you really want to see businesses thrive, you're going to have to sift through the client state builders, and you're going to have to sift through the Republicans who are actually corporatist fascists
as opposed to promoters of free market local economies. The only way you can do that is if you understand these issues so that you can identify the difference between, say, Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, or someone like Justin Amash, who's now facing a primary battle up in Michigan because the rhinos don't like him, because he actually almost got a bill passed to curtail the spying of the NSA on every single American. Another nonpartisan issue.
Why would he want to pass a bill to not be spied on? I mean, what the hell? If I'm not doing anything wrong, who cares?
Yeah, Lindsey Grahamnesty. So, you know, it's this kind of insanity that happens. Now, Trog, we were supposed to be off Obamacare about 32 minutes ago.
Well, we
that
better
didn't
mix.
Happen.
We better mix.
We got a little sidetracked.
Let me add something to what you were just saying. One of the other action items that you can do, and this is what frustrated the crap out of me with the Virginia gubernatorial race, is Cuccinelli could have won if he had more money and he had more people show up at the voting. It was that simple. He was so close. He was climbing so fast, making up from double digits to almost, you know, within 1.something% of winning that gubernatorial race. Now they got basically a communist in there, you know, who's just tearing. He's going to tear that state to pieces. And it was such a small number. Yeah, sorry, you got to live in it. Time to move, baby. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that people don't understand is you could have influenced that even though you didn't live there. You could have sent money, and you could have called people, and you could have educated people on the importance of the difference between who was running, you know, against each other and what Cuccinelli was going to do for the state, and not just the state, but on a national level when it rolls into the 2016 elections or even 2014, the influence on that. That was important. So when you look at what can I do, well, I don't live there. You can still do things. Amash is being primaried by the rhinos, by the Democrats in the Republican Party. Let's just call them what they are, okay? They're not, you know, just Republicans in name only. These guys are, their voting records are worse than the Democrat 15 years ago. So here we go.
They're undocumented Democrats.
Yeah, he needs money. He needs people to hear about it. He needs people to know that he's being primaried by his own party. Amash is one of the rising stars in the GOP. He posts every bill that he votes on. He explains the bill. He explains why he voted the way he votes. He is so transparent. He's everything that we want government. Government just hit 6% low for Congress, a new poll, lower than car salesmen, okay? They just went from 9% to 6%, so they're down there around cockroach level. And then you get guys like Amash who are honest, open, you know who he is, what he believes in. He votes like what he believes in. You may not agree with him on every issue, but when you look at that character, he has an economics degree and he has the Austrian economics background, which is 90% of what we're talking about here when we talk about economics. So, you know, there he is. He needs help, folks. That's an action item. Don't lose good people like him. You know, don't lose good people like Gowdy and you know, Rand and Cruz, and, you know, you've got to support the good guys. It isn't just a battle against the bad guys. You've got to support the good guys because, you know, we're so busy going, rah, 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 oh, yeah, hey, Cruz, go, yeah, Rand, go, oh, look at that film, whoa, whoa. Sometimes you got to support them, you know what I mean, because they're busting their butts and they're taking it from both sides. They're attacked 24-7 for standing on principle. And you know what's amazing? And maybe it's because of my age, I don't know. But what's amazing to me is when I look at Rand or Cruz or Amash, they're just typical good Republicans, in my opinion, based on when I was growing up, you know, free markets, limited central, you know, government, you know, not having, you know, wars for the sake of wars and profit, but actually having a real moral reason or a justified, you know, a just war. You know, I mean, the fundamental principles of what these guys talk about aren't weird libertarian ideas. And I don't mean to say libertarians are weird, but, you know, that's how that's how the media plays it. You know, oh, yeah, when they want to beat up on Rand, oh, he's a libertarian. I'm going, no, he's not. He's a classical liberal. He is a structurally a constitutional driven conservative. That's what he is. Mm-hmm. And if you want to call that a libertarian, then we got problems with defining words, which is why we're doing that on the
Daily Show. Yeah, of course we are, and of course it's true. And here, you know, now because that they're standing up for what have, I don't know if it's traditionally, but at least, you know, since the 80s, you know, Republican platform principles of real conservatism, suddenly they're right-wing extremists, legislative arsonists, bomb throwers, hostage takers. But you're right, that's not the case. They are where the Republican Party says that it is. The problem is most of the Republicans in the Republican Party have moved far to the left, and they've only kept the rhetorical appeal of being conservative. And you've got to learn to sift through that. Yeah, that too. But yeah, you've got to learn to sift through the BS. No, you know, it's not just what they say, it's what they do. And it's not only how they vote, because sometimes they rig these votes so that they can vote one way on the floor while they're working in the back to do it. I mean, look, John Boehner did that. He was and Harry Reid leaked these emails. Yeah, John Boehner was trying to get these subsidies for himself and for you know his congressional buddies while he was speaking against it on the floor. That's the kind of hypocrisy that goes on, and you've got to find it, you've got to expose it, you've got to tell other people about it, and we got to support the real conservatives, and you got to fire the rhinos. And before you go apeshit crazy about, oh, they suck, so we're going to go third party, realize that on the national level, right now, because of the way the precincts are controlled by the Democrats and the Republicans, the way the media plays only to Democrats and Republicans, the way the debates are only between Democrats and Republicans, a third party is not going to make it unless somehow the corporate media gets behind it. The only reason that they ever get behind a third party candidate is if they figure it's going to split the vote against the alleged conservative. So until you change the rules, and you have to do that locally, you got to get a few seats for your independent candidates, a few seats for your Libertarian Party, Constitution Party, whatever, candidates to start, maybe grab a couple of governorships, which the Constitution Party almost did in Colorado, until you get that to happen, the national stage, you got two choices. There's the D's and the R's. Now, they both suck, but at least in the Elephant Party, there are some who actually have conservative principles. And remember, real conservative principles are two-thirds libertarian anyway, so there's a lot of overlap there. So start working together instead of fighting with each other about everything, and start moving the ball back in the other direction towards the constitutional republic. It took us over 100 years to get to this disastrous place we are now. You ain't going to fix it in 2014 or even in 2016. But if you don't start, we're never going to get it fixed. It is fixable.
Yeah, and if you throw in
but
you
we're
throw
pretty
elections,
damn close to the finish line.
If you throw elections, you're not going to get it fixed either. So, you know,
exactly. And this is coming from someone who did not vote for the Republican in the last election, because the Republican in the last election was a Democrat that Karl Rove ran in the Republican Party. So we got about 20 minutes of live air left. I'm going to take a minute, 2 minute break here and wrap up the quote Obamacare discussion with a little song. Here goes Remy.
You said while the law was being debated, if you like your plan, you can keep it. You said after the law was implemented or signed, if you like your plan, you can keep it. Americans believed you, sir, when you said that to them over and over.
How dare you, sir? Yeah, you, yeah, I said it. No respect for a bait and switch? Give us credit. Straight spitting fibs from the ghetto to Tokyo. You think we Geppetto the way we getting Pinocchios? Heard the details, heard complaints aplenty, read the emails.
Not that you sent us any.
You think Obamacare's falling apart by any tally? Rumbling so bad, you think it's made by Nature Valley? Got a new ad campaign across the world. We got one for dudes, we got one for girls. So if you press call boys, want a chance, inquire. I hope you brought small, cause these pants on fire.
There are millions of people are trying to accept the loss of their plans you told them could be kept. And one thing that's baffling folks around the planet is how have these plans been canceled but Two Broke Girls hasn't?
I've tried and I've tried, but the effort's in vain. Never has a website inflicted such pain for our wasted time and the bailout in sight.
For users of healthcare.gov,
no, people who drafted Ray Wright said folks to keep their plan. Look where that led.
We didn't say plan. We said
no, you said like kayak, like Amazon, like a laser, pronto.
No, kayaking on the Amazon with the mayor of Toronto.
Can't comment, G.
But, can't comment, cuz.
Why can't you comment?
I don't have Google
Plus. But this is your law. And
and now people need help. I mean, you wrote this thing. Did you just knockout game yourself? Ugh, again. Selling hopes like selling soap, son, I'll tell you why. You can't make either one without a little bit of lie. Selling hopes like selling soap, son, I'll tell you why. You can't make either one without a little bit of lie. Selling hopes like selling soap, son, I'll tell you why. You can't make either one without a little bit of lie. Selling hopes like selling soap, son, I'll tell you why. You can't make either one without a little bit of lie.
I mean, you got to have a little fun while this is happening, but the simple fact is that this Obamacare thing is not about a website. It's not about insurance reform, and it's not about medical care. It is about destroying the economy and consolidating power in one place so the corporations don't have to compete for money. They can just grab it all by controlling the levers of power. You have to take it back. The power belongs to the people, and the way that works is by reinstating federalism, dual sovereignty, local autonomy, and checks and balances. If you don't do it, who will? Yeah,
and competition.
Now, the only way that you're going to do it is if you quit posting crap about Obama. Everybody who doesn't like him knows he sucks, and everybody who likes him at this point is a really deluded fool who you're not going to convince. So don't waste your time. Focus on the things you can do something about. Instead of going in the same haunting places on social media and talking to the same people on the phone or on Blog Talk Radio or whatever about the same things, reach out to other people. 114 million people did not vote in the last presidential election. Even less people are going to vote in the midterms. Turnout is huge, and that means turnout for the real conservatives. And don't forget, the fight for 2014 has already begun. And the primaries, where someone like Justin Amash is getting attacked by the rhinos, and where someone like Mitch McConnell is being primaried by real Tea Party conservatives, find the right sides and get on board. If you've got money, or I should say if you've got money to spare, then you can support the candidates. Do not give any money to the Republican Party. They will use it against you. Give it directly to the conservative candidates. If you don't have money, invest some sweat capital. Like Chris said, make some phone calls. They don't have to be in your own state. Get other people to make phone calls. Get people involved. So the idea is reach out. Spread this show. We're talking about stuff that a lot of the media and even some of the stuff on Blog Talk Radio and so an alternate media isn't even addressing. Okay, and it's this battle between real conservatives and fake Republicans. And that's the key, because if you want to see alternate parties, independent parties, if you want to see more electoral competition, easier access to ballots, more restoration of local power, you got to take over the GOP and you got to roll back this gigantic federal government so that there's more freedom to do these things the way that they should be done in your community, in your state or commonwealth. That's the only way to do it. And the key thing to understanding this is understanding where they stand on the real issues. I don't want to hear any rhetorical bullshit about, you know, Iran and their nuclear weapon. First of all, Iran is nowhere near getting a nuclear weapon. And second of all, if we wanted to take out their nuclear capability, a couple of surgical strikes, a couple of, you know, dead scientists, a couple of blown up buildings will do it. We do not have to go to war. That's not what this is about. This is designed to scare you so you stop worrying about the broken healthcare.gov website and the crappy law that's getting 130 million people booted off their insurance. Don't fall for it. And don't let the Republicans take the rhetorical high ground while they seek to undermine conservative principles. Is there a civil war in this party? You're damn right there is. There always has been. Because the progressive element is always trying to take over both parties to give you a false sense of choice so the state keeps growing, the money keeps rolling in, and the corporatist cronies keep getting paid. If you want to take it back so that the people have the power and local autonomy and dual sovereignty and checks and balances, you got to do the heavy lifting. So don't sit in the wagon. Get out and pull. Chris?
You know, I was going to say something about the wagon. I'll just add this on as a little point, but it's important to understand. We've already heard multiple interviews of people who have come out and said, I can't afford this crap, and all I got to do is quit that second job and go on the system and get in the damn wagon, and I get part of my insurance covered. This thing is going to build more wagons, and more people are going to get in them because it's going to crush that fine line between I'm just barely making it, but I have pride in my life, and I don't want to rely on the system, you know, and I'm struggling, but I'm an American, and I have some self-esteem, and all of a sudden, this is for millions of people, this is going to be that thing that says, screw it, I'm getting in the wagon. They're going to destroy it. I can't afford to keep working. I can't afford it, so I'm just going to become part of the system. This is creating dependent people. And this is not about those 40 million people that lie of people who don't have insurance. I mean, my God, people, we got Medicaid. We got Medicare. We got Medicaid. We've got systems. We got programs. Why in the hell didn't they fix the programs that we already had? Why is it that they had to go out and force this debacle on the rest of the country and force everybody to pay more? You cannot believe that there wasn't an alternative motive. If you do, then you're lost, and just get in the damn wagon, and we'll pull you along until the economy
comes. Well, you know, whether it's an unintended consequence or whether it's malicious intent at this point, to quote Hillary Clinton, at this point, what difference does it make? It's crashing and burning and taking out jobs and the economy with it. All you have to do right now is delay this damn thing. So get on board and get with the conservatives who are actually going to unravel this thing. Look, a lot of the Republicans wanted Obamacare not to be delayed because they wanted it to crash so they'd have something to run against. Ted Cruz was actually asked that question. They said, why don't you just let it crash and then run against it? And he said, well, that's
it's gonna hurt
political
people.
Victory, an electoral victory. But, yeah, it's going to hurt a lot of people, and my job is to come up here and stop that from happening. That's what I ran on in Texas. That's what the people of Texas elected me to do, and that's what I'm fighting tooth and nail to do. Now, just because these conservatives are up here fighting doesn't mean they're going to win. And, in fact, as long as the Republicans are working against them, they're probably not going to win. But the only way you can guarantee a loss is surrender before the fight begins. The fact is that you've got to put up a fight because these statists are really nothing more than bullies. And the way that you make a bully cringe is you stand up to him. And these guys are standing up. And there's a lot of people out there doing it, but it can't be done alone. You cannot rely on your politician to do it. So delegating power to them to go to government and represent your interests doesn't mean that you get to sit on your ass the next 730-some days until the next election. You have to stay on top of them. You're delegating them to do a job, and the good ones are going to actually do it in a sacrificial way as opposed to self-aggrandizing themselves, but you have to stay on top of them. That's what citizen government is about. If you don't like it, then why don't you go ahead and just vote for the statists and get in the wagon and let them tell you where to shit, where to eat, when to sleep, where you can go to work, what you can educate your kids, and pretty soon how you worship and when you will die. If that's what you want, then be honest about it and say that. But if you say that you love America, you love the Republic, you love the Constitution, then get off your ass and fight. Because if you don't, who will? And don't sit there and whine about those who aren't fighting. You know, that's the problem. When you're sitting there whining about the people sitting in the wagon as you're pulling the wagon, that's not doing any good. Because guess what? You're not really pulling the wagon that hard anymore. You're kind of just holding the rope and pretending to pull the wagon while some of us are actually pulling the wagon and more people are getting in the wagon, and the wagon's going to get stuck in a ditch. So start pulling your weight. Don't worry about what the others are doing, but get those who are genuinely on the same page as we are as far as fundamental principles of what this country is about, get them active. Because to sit back and bitch is no good. To sit there and post all sorts of crap but actually not make a call to the Capitol Hill, to the Senate, to the White House, or what have you, doesn't do anything. If your only responsibility is to show up every 2 or 4 years to vote, when we have elections every year anyway, then you're part of the problem. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. It sucks. I know you've got better things to do. I know you got a business to run, a job to go to, a family to raise. But if you want to actually do those things, you're going to have to fight. So it means sacrificing time to make sure that liberty lives in this country. Otherwise, we're going down into the zombie apocalypse, and all you're going to do is say, well, I wish there was something I could have done.
Here's I just want to throw this in before you go to the next vid. I have, the voting percentages, voting age population, mm-hmm. From 2012 back to 1960. In 1960, 63% of the people showed up to vote, and on an off year, midterms, it was 47.3%. Now we're dealing with numbers like 53.6 and 37.8. And 37.8 is actually high for a midterm. That was a Tea Party movement. So you think about that. That was only 38% of the population got up and did something, and we took over total control of House and Senate and governorships of 24 states and 34 governorships, took back control of the House and almost won the Senate back in 2010 with only 38% of the people getting off their butts and turning off the damn TV and getting out and educating themselves and voting. So if we could take that number back to 1962, 47.3%, we'd change our country next year. It's really that simple.
Yep.
If you like statistical analysis, you know, and I'm a strategist in my background, so, you know, when I look at things like that, I think, wow, it is really that simple. The difficult part is getting people off the bull crap, off the Obama postings, the conspiracies, like how many generals got fired. I mean, who the hell cares? You know, maybe they wanted to retire.
Well,
maybe, you know, they were, you know, doing gambling problems. I mean, I don't know, and there's nothing going to
affect
anything.
There's nothing you can do about it.
Doing, yeah, focus on the things that matter that you can do something about. And one of the most frustrating things of social media for me, and I've been put on so many freaking groups I can't even stand it. I've, you know, gotten off 50 and then I get put on 50 more. Once in a while I'll go on there and I'll look around and I'm thinking, who are these people posting this crap? And you begin to think after a while that these are just people, you know, paid trolls to come in here, disrupt, confuse,
sure,
and put the fear into people. And that's, you know, that's Cloward,
yep,
Pivens. That's the whole strategy behind, you know, confusing, fear and confusion. And what you have to do is you have to focus on things that matter, figure out what you believe in, support the people who are fighting the cause, and I don't care what party they're in. Support the right people, you know, and win again. It's really that freaking simple. But it isn't easy, and it's especially difficult if you're distracted by all this crap. And I, you know, I'm a mountain climber, martial artist, you know, I've done all these really insane crap all my life, and I'd be dead if I wasn't focused some of the things I've done. And, you know, I, before extreme sports was ever a word, I was one. You know, I lived in Alaska half my life and I did crazy stuff, wilderness things. You know, I've stood where no other man has ever stood, you know, mountain climbing, you know, all that crap. And I, like I said, I'd be dead if I wasn't focused. And I learned that at a very young age because of athletics, you know, to focus and drive. You know, they look at, you know, when they watch a martial artist break a rock or something with their bare hand, they're like, wow, how'd you do that? And they look at all the wrong things. It's in the mind. You know, it comes from the mind,
yeah,
first. And that's what you have to do. And I believe, and you and I have the same, you know, basic faith issues. You know, we're driven by those faith issues. So I don't get confused, you know, and get caught off guard. Yeah, you know, I get overwhelmed with the news and media and stuff like that too. And when all these scandals broke one after the other, after the other, after the other, my thing at that point, you know, especially on my group, was to go, okay, I'm going to build some threads for this because they are issues, but I want to stay focused on the important thing, 2014, backing conservatives, educating people. It was that simple. It never got any more complicated than that, regardless of how screwed up our economy gets, our society gets, our government gets, the media, whatever. The thread of truth is always there, and you've got to focus on it. It's simple when you focus. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the fact is that, look, if you're going to focus, you can, basically in life there's really not much more you can focus on than three things. So when it comes to grassroots,
yep,
political activism, focus on three things. The first thing is build an army, which means get people who are currently not involved involved. They might be Republican voters who actually think they're conservative but end up voting for rhinos because they're not involved. Get them involved and get them informed so that we don't run into the whole, you know, Mitt Romney, Karl Rove problem again. Second of all,
yeah,
find those issues about which a grassroots tsunami directed at Capitol Hill can make a difference. Obamacare defund delay was one of them. Audit the Fed is another, and I'm guessing that, you know, since we did it with Syria, ending the next war will be another. But that's what you got to focus on, and you don't have to be articulate about these points or a super genius.
you just have to know where you stand on the issue as a conservative. And if you're not sure what that is, go back to fundamentals. You always go back to fundamentals. And Russell Kirk's 10 Principles of Conservatism is a great place to start. The links are on Liberty Thunder on Facebook. They're in Coalition of Freedom on Facebook, and they're in the Militia of Liberty's Thunder. We did a whole show on it. You can just scroll down the Blog Talk Radio page and go to Conservative Chain Reaction. It's a whole show about the 10 principles, even though we only got to 1.5, and sometime soon, hopefully, we'll do a few more about that and link them in. It's just, you know, sometimes it's tough getting all this stuff together to do just 2 hours a week. And speaking of 2 hours, we're almost at that mark. If you want to keep listening live, 646-649-1013. Assuming we don't get knocked off Blog Talk Radio, we're probably going to go another 20, 25 minutes, but we're trying to wrap this up. If you don't get on the phone in 3.5 minutes, you are going to be cut off in your browser. If you're listening in archive, just keep rolling. You won't notice the difference. But the call-in number is 646-649-1013. And we're going to shift gears a little bit, although not really since we've been talking about it through the whole show. And we're going to get to what's going on right now with the confirmation of Janet Yellen as the next chairman of the Fed. And here's the thing to understand about the Fed. The chairman of the Fed really is not all that important because the Federal Reserve is governed by the New York branch only. The others think they do something, but in truth, the final analysis, the policies come down from the New York branch, which is ironically on Liberty Street in Lower Manhattan. The Fed chair is allegedly appointed by the president, although that's a bunch of horseshit because basically the Fed itself gives him a list of people that he can pick from, and they're all going to do exactly what the Fed wants. The president just gets to pick the one that he will feel will give him political advantage. In Obama's case, he picked the most incompetent of the people on the list just because she happens to be a woman. And after 100 years, he can take credit for being the first president to nominate a woman to the position of mouthpiece for the international banksters. Woohoo! Let me add this real quick
before you start the video. She also, and it was on the other Peter Schiff videos when he went off on her, but she also saw none of this economic crash coming. That's who he picked. Anyway, go ahead. My God.
Yeah, it's actually about 10 minutes, but I broke it up into a couple pieces. Here's about 5.5 minutes. This is going to take us into overtime. So if you want to listen to it, 646-649-1013. This is Peter Schiff with Senator Rand Paul.
Your senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul. Rand, welcome to the program. Rand, are you there?
I am. How are you doing today, Peter?
I am good. I'm good. So tell me about your plans with respect to the nomination of Janet Yellen, because as you know, I believe that of all the candidates that were on the president's shortlist, Janet Yellen was the least competent, and of course that's why the president picked her. But what are you planning on doing with respect to the confirmation hearing?
We're going to do everything we can to stop her. I probably don't have the votes or the ability to stop her, but we will slow down the process as much as possible. We would like to say that we will get out of the way and allow the process to go faster if they will give us a vote on auditing the Fed. It's been held hostage in the Senate for 3 years now. It passed overwhelmingly in the House. Every Republican and 100 Democrats passed audit the Fed. I think the American people are behind it. It's a bipartisan bill, and there's no reason why we shouldn't get a vote in the Senate. Whether or not me holding up things, it's not a permanent hold. I can't hold it. They will just have a vote, and they will roll over me. But I can make it more difficult for them to get her passed, and in doing so, maybe we can get a vote on audit the Fed, but we'll see.
You know, I think, though, if you highlight how incompetent she was as a Fed governor, if you go back to the speeches that I've been talking about that she made in 2005 and 2006, where she was so completely oblivious to the risks in the economy, where she downplayed those risks and dismissed the criticism that others had, saying that there was no housing bubble, that there was no evidence of a bubble, that even if there was, it wouldn't matter because housing was a small part of the economy. Even if housing prices went down, which she didn't expect, she thought they would keep on going up. I think if you really focus on her lack of competence, that you might be able to find some sympathy for the argument that why should we make her the Fed chairman when she was so incompetent as a member of the Fed? Why do we want the blind leading the blind?
Well, Peter, you don't understand how they measure somebody who would be competent for the job. They look at it like this. If you were to be head of Apple Computers and you made a lot of iPods, you'd be a good CEO. If you're going to be head of the Fed and you can create lots of dollars, they think that that's a good prerequisite for the job. So the fact that, you know, we have added $3 trillion to the Fed's asset sheets, they think that's good to create money. And so they just have a different perspective on this. So they're all loving Janet Yellen because they think she'll be somebody who will create inflation. They all want inflation now. So I think she'll be a disaster for the country. I think we're creating a new bubble in the stock market if we haven't already. I think the wealth that's gained in the stock market and the extra assets in banks are an illusion of wealth. And I think there will be a correction without ever truly getting out of the last recession. I'm afraid there could be another correction within a correction. So I think she'll be bad for the country, but I think there's probably 70 votes for her. So I don't want people to get the misconception that I can defeat her or stop her. I can temporarily derail and slow down the process, draw attention to the fact that the Fed audit's been held for 3 years and been held hostage by Harry Reid. But ultimately, I probably cannot defeat her.
Well, you should be able to at least get more Republicans on board. After all, if Republicans oppose big government, it's the Federal Reserve printing all this money that is financing the big government.
You're exactly right. There will be. I think there's getting to be more Republicans coming forward, and I think that if I lead the charge on this, we can get more Republicans to oppose her nomination. So we will do everything we can, and I will try to stop it as long as I can, and I will try very hard to get audit the Fed. And I think there's an outside chance. Mm-hmm. If they're in a rush, that they will say, okay, we'll just give you a vote on audit the Fed. So, you know, we are still pushing, and I just want people to know that every day and every way, I am pushing for a vote on audit the Fed.
But I think it's a great forum. Even if we can't succeed there, we can at least succeed in shining a light on the Fed and the failures at the Fed, and in particular the failures of Janet Yellen, so that we don't continue to perpetuate the myth that she was warning about the housing bubble and warning about the financial crisis. This is a myth that's been concocted by the left to portray her as being far more competent than she really is. So let's at least, when we nominate her, let's let the public, let the American people know who we're nominating, because they think we're nominating somebody a lot more competent than she actually is.
I think you're exactly right, and I think that if anything, she's going to be more in favor of inflation than Bernanke was, and that's saying a lot. So, no, I think we need to be worried. We need to be worried about, inflating another bubble in our economy that will ultimately lead to more repercussions. We also need to point out that the people who suffer in recessions are the working class, those on fixed income. Those are the people who are less able to absorb a recession or a change readjustment to malinvestment. So really, it should be the working class that comes forward and cries out, you know, the Fed is really helping the wealthy become more wealthy and helping and unfortunately hurting the poor and the working class.
I started calling it today trickle-down monetary policy. If you want to adopt that, I think you can, because it doesn't work. It just rains inflation on Main Street. I mean, you...
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to say this again. I say it every show. If you don't understand what they were just talking about, then you need to educate yourself. And sometimes I think, you know, we get on this roll because of our backgrounds, and you know, we think we're making sense, but this can be gobbledygosh to people, you know. So I don't want to be I want to be really careful, because I don't want to be angry about this, but it's frustrating to think of how many people think they're conservatives, or how many people, you know, post-Obama stuff all day long, every day, don't understand basic economics. And that is frustrating, because, and I look at you know, whatever you think about Ron Paul, one of the things that Ron Paul brought to this nation was a conversation about economics. And he brought and he educated the population on the Fed and that debacle. And many people learned a lot from him. So you can agree or disagree on a lot of different things or his speaking style. You know, I have my own opinions about things, but he is absolutely right on economics. And it's important to understand that America as we understood it is at risk. And it was actually, it was at risk a long time ago, but we're at the end of that. And when I listen to people like Rand or other people like Amash or people who understand economics, you know, when they're saying, well, I think there could be, they're really being polite because he's a politician and he doesn't want to scare the crap out of people. You know, he didn't want to be labeled as a conspiracy theorist, but there is a correction coming. It is not a question of, oh, there might be one coming. It's coming. You know, it's already in motion. We already have. Go to the grocery store, go to the gas station, go to Home Depot and look at the prices. It's already started. Nobody, including Fox News, is talking about it. The real correction is going to be when all this monetized debt, i.e. all this printed money, all this borrowed money that we'll never pay back, you know, when all that starts to move through the whole economy because they've kept it in the upper echelons, in the banks, in the stock market, the Wall Street people, they've held on to that money. And there's a great video, I can't remember the name of it, but I've posted it before, that is one of the best. There's a lot of good videos on this, but it's a great video explaining what this game between the Fed and the Treasury really is. And when you watch it,
they're all on our page.
It moves to the and it makes it goes to that next stage when it talks about fiat currency because a lot of people think that's a car. You know, fiat currency is when they take $100 and then they break it up into 7, 10, 15 parts and lend it out again, and then it moves to the next level and it gets broken up into more parts and more parts and more parts until, you know, you've got $100 in the bank, but you got $1,000 in the market. It's fake. And when you try to figure out the complexity or the simplicity of 2008 crash, it really boiled down to about a 0.05% hiccup in the economy. Well, when you're spread out that thin, you know, a half a percent can destroy the whole damn economy. And we've done this with the savings and loan debacle. We did it with the 90s with the dot-bomb era. It's the same dynamics every damn time. It's banks overextending, over credit, over printing, over lending, cheap money. Everybody gets spread out. The risk gets too high. There's a correction in the market, 1%, 2%, bam, the whole damn economy crashes. They print a bunch of money, borrow a bunch of money. They pay the bankers back for all their bad investments, and you suffer, and you pay for it. That's really how simple it is, and they do it over and over and over, and it's always a connection between Wall Street and politicians, lobbyists, and lawyers. And these are the people that you have to vote for or not vote for. And that's why this is important to learn and understand, because you want people who, regardless of other things you may agree and disagree about in terms of their personality or other policies or whatever, whether you're talking about Rand or Cruz or Amash or whatever, you have to look at how they view economics, because if you don't have strong economics, you're never going to be free. Period. End of report. Our founding fathers understood this in the 1700s. Okay?
Yeah,
the average American doesn't have a clue today.
No, you're absolutely right, Christian. This boom-bust cycle is intentionally created by the Federal Reserve's monetary manipulation. And what happens every time the boom-bust cycle happens is you get this irrational exuberance, as Greenspan called it, and you get this massive malinvestment. And then when it all comes crashing down, which it always does, they socialize the losses, which means they put it on the backs of the people, and they run off with their profits. It's just that simple. The fact is that the manipulation of the money supply, you know, like that fiat currency, it's not a car. It just simply means that they say this paper garbage is legal tender, use it. And it creates a moral hazard. because it incentivizes malinvestment, and then you get a crash, and then the people end up bearing the burden, and the corporatists and their political lackeys walk off with more money and more power. If you want to stop it, then you've got to take action. The action you can take right now, there is a bill. It's been there for 3 years. Harry Reid has been holding it up. There is an audit
bipartisan
bill, and it's got bipartisan support. Harry Reid actually supported it before he became the majority leader, which shows you how corrupt this whole system is. But there is a bill there. Rand Paul is trying to make it go forward as part of this confirmation for Janet Yellen. But it's not going to happen if people aren't calling about it. Now, if you can get, what was it, 1 billion people to watch Psy's Gangnam-style YouTube video, you can't get, several hundred thousand, a couple of million to call about audit the Fed. For God's sake, just get on board. And if you want a place to get resources about these things legislatively, go to Campaign for Liberty. If you want to learn about it, Mises.org is a great place. And if you're looking for the moral aspect, go to Acton.org. That's another good website, A-C-T-O-N, like Lord Acton.org. Now, I remember when I first, was learning about the Fed because I was entering economic life as an adult out of high school. And so I started trying to figure out how money worked, and I came across the Mises website and started reading Murray Rothbard's books about the topic and read Human Action and really got a understanding of economics because I figured I'm going to be involved in the economy. I want to know what it is. And then I stumbled across this guy, Dr. Ron Paul. I didn't know who he was. And I come to find out he's actually a congressman. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Someone who actually understands this stuff's in Congress. How did that happen? Whether you like Ron Paul or you don't like Ron Paul, whether you agree that he should have been president or should have never run in the party, it's irrelevant at this point. At this point, what difference does it make? The key is that he brought the issue of the Fed to light. It's the reason why he actually got in political life in the first place. And now his son and other real conservatives and people as divergent as, say, Bernie Sanders, who's a socialist from Vermont, there is a move to do this. We're at the end stages of this scheme. It is going to collapse soon. One way or another, it is not sustainable. What comes next is up to you. You have to understand this stuff, and you have to put political pressure on our Congress, because our Congress is supposed to have the control of the money through the Treasury in order to bring it closest to the people. Now it's all under control by a private bank in Manhattan. And that's why the politics has gone crazy. It's very important that you know this. There's another 6 minutes of this, which I'd love to play, but we're running out of time. So just go to Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, find the picture for this week's show, click on it in the comments section. I have all these clips and articles and other references. Join the militia of Liberty's Thunder. Unfortunately, the URL is the Texan Rex's Liberty Militia. But go there and go to Coalition of Freedom also. All these resources are there. Get informed, get educated. Most importantly, create a force multiplier and get other people involved. In order to wrap this up, we're going to probably have to go to final thoughts, but did you want to comment any more about the Fed thing with Schiff?
No, I think you covered it perfectly. Is you need to this is an action item. You need to get educated. I mean, you work your whole damn life for money. And people are struggling, and they're going to continue to struggle. And even if Obama left today, the repercussions of the policies are going to go on for years. It's going to take time. It's going to take some serious reform, to turn it around. I think it's, looking at, one of the best examples of reform after a terrible time was, from Carter to Reagan. And there's a lot to learn there. So, you can get on there and do some learning, because we're not talking about anything new and different. You go back to Rome, they were doing this to the economy. And they screwed it up. And they crashed their economy too. And they had to have endless wars, to continue to, to bread and circuses, to continue to conquer and finance wars. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun. So we're not like trying to stretch your brain out of your head and destroy your peace of mind. These are just basic things that you should learn as a citizen and as an adult of America, you know, not to be too sarcastic, but, you know, that's important. And just stay on it. You know, we just keep bringing it up and educating on it, and hopefully people will continue to, you know, follow through on their own. I have a thread on Coalition of Freedom that's a financial or economic thread, and I think I cleared it out three or four times. I mean, we post a lot of stuff, and I try to keep that thread active and the best people and the best articles and the best vids on it, because it's important. And in reality, I'd like to just have a group on economics, but it's, you know, it would be very minimal amount of activity, because I don't know why, but people just don't get into it. And it, you know, this
intimidating.
Is more important than, yeah, it's more important than American Idol. It's more important than Monday Night Football, because it's going to impact the rest of your flipping life. And if you don't start involving yourself in it and getting the right people in Congress, think about it, Rex. Why is Rand and Cruz and Amash and Gohmert and all these guys, you know, why are they attacked all the time? Because they're calling for a return to constitutional government. You know, and you look at the governors, and we haven't even got into that, but you look at the governors across the nation, you know, Obama likes to tout the new unemployment figures, even though there's people have just quit looking for jobs, so the numbers are a lie anyway. It's like 15-18%. But when you look at the successful numbers they have, well, we got 24 full-control Republican states who've made reforms since 2010, who've cut massive Democrat, socialistic, communistic, fascist programs. They've cut and reformed. And so those states are starting to, you know, respond to that and starting to move forward and build industry and attract business and hire people outside of Obamacare issues, you know, and grow. And so we've got positive economic figures in some facets of the country. But if you look at where those states are, you're going to find 99.999% of them are Republican-controlled states. And there's not enough
generally
attention
conservative
put on
Republicans.
That. Yeah, and yeah. There's just not enough attention put on that, and that's unfortunate because it's a selling idea. Free enterprise, free markets, constitutional, you know, rule of law works. It's what built this country into the country it was and could be again. And what's destroyed it is socialism, you know, secular humanism, destroying the family unit, making people dependent on government. That's what's destroyed it. That is the battle we're in, and it's an economic power battle. That's why this part of the conversation is so important. I'd rather talk about cats and dogs and hunting and telling bear stories in Alaska and probably have a bigger audience, but shit, that ain't going to save my country. Shoot.
Exactly.
Sorry.
That's all right. We've already dropped enough of those now. Oh, at this point,
yeah.
What difference does it make? Cool.
Rock and roll.
Are you done? All right. Well,
sure, why not?
All right, here we go. You know, batteries not included, right? That's the thing you get when you buy all the new gizmos for Christmas presents and all that stuff. Is batteries not included? You got to buy the batteries separately. And the batteries, of course, cost a shitload more than they used to, not because batteries cost more to make, but because of inflation caused by the Federal Reserve. So, you know, that's how it works. But you have to understand that the batteries are not included in the Republican Party. It is just an organization. It is just a shell. It is just a structure. It will do what those who populate it tell it to do. So you have two choices. You can either go build a new fangled thing and stick the batteries in there and hope that one day it'll actually work, or you can take the crappy Rhino batteries out of the GOP and put in conservative batteries to batter the hell out of the rhinos and the Democrats and put this country back where it's supposed to be, which is a constitutional republic where the power is diffused and where there's economic freedom and liberty. Otherwise, what happens is power keeps consolidating. You have less economic liberty, which means you have no liberty whatsoever. And that is what power-hungry madmen in high places want. It's not a conspiracy. It's human nature. If you can use the bludgeon of government to batter people to buy your product, you don't have to compete in the marketplace and vie for their dollars by producing a better mousetrap.
you can just simply sell them a crappy mousetrap because they have to buy it from you. That's why corporatism is the economic system we're in. That's why the Federal Reserve is controlling our money supply, and essentially, since it controls the money that Congress spends and the President, it controls the White House and Congress as well. But it can be stopped because the Constitution is still the law of the land. We still have those buttons and levers to push, despite the fact that Harry Reid nuked the Senate and turned it into a useless parliament, and as Rand Paul called him, he's the dictator of the Senate. There are still some things you can do to obstruct and slow it down until you can actually get electoral victories. And when I say electoral victories, I am not talking about Republican wins. I don't give a shit about Republican wins. If you reelect McConnell, that's actually worse than electing the friggin' Democrat running in Kentucky. You need to elect a real conservative, and there are real conservatives running in primaries against McConnell. Don't give your money to the GOP. Give it to the candidates directly. Figure out who's the real conservative and who's the fake conservative, and don't just think if someone calls themselves Tea Party, they're a conservative. Marco Rubio says he's Tea Party. He's not a conservative. Chris Christie says he's a conservative. He's not a conservative. So find the real conservatives who stand on those principles that actually restore freedom to everybody, create economic growth, and return this country to where it needs to be. The most important thing is ask yourself every day, what have I done today to advance the cause of liberty? What have I done today to advance authentic conservatism in our governments at local, state, and federal level? And who have I gotten to do it also? Have I touched at least three people today who were otherwise not involved or were misinformed and educated them or at least given them something to consider to move them in the right direction so that they can take action so we can maybe audit the Fed? Maybe we can repeal or at least delay Obamacare. Maybe, you know, we can get these victories in place now so that 2014 we can actually increase the ranks of conservatives in the Republican Party, in the federal government, and decrease the statists, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. I really don't care. They're both bad. In fact, the Republican statists are probably worse because, as Chris said, they're in our tent. So understand something. You don't have to love the Republican Party. I've never been a member of the Republican Party. I sure as shit won't become a member of this party unless they give me a really good reason. When I was old enough to vote, it was George H.W. Bush pretending to be Reagan, and I wasn't going to vote for him. Unfortunately, I was convinced to. But nevertheless, I won't join this party because of that reason. Now, if this party actually becomes conservative and becomes the party of Reagan and Gingrich and Paul, then maybe I will join. But until that happens, no way in hell. But it is a useful tool because it has the organization and the structure in place. So take it over. That's what you have to do. Take it over and take this country back. Now, that doesn't mean take it back to the 1950s or the 1780s. It means take it back to the principles applied to the 21st century so that people can get back to work, people can have more health care, and people can live freer lives and help each other out. Chris, I know you got a final thought, and then I'll close it out.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up, you know, an action item for people. I think people need to go back and go to YouTube and listen to Ronald Reagan speak. Almost every speech that he does, he talks about individual freedom. He talks about – when we look at Reagan, we think, you know, he was the quintessential conservative. And yet, he sounds no different than Rand, Amash, Cruz, and the rest of them because he talked about freedom. But somewhere along the line from the late 80s till 2013, you know, that's considered some kind of kooky, weird, you know, extremist. And yet, that's just really what the founding fathers put this country together to be. That was for you as an individual to be able to chart your course in your life. You know, to make money, make a lot, make a little, you know, work for somebody, start your own business, invent something, you know, and own the tools of your trade, own your own property, do what the hell you want on it. That was the founding, that's what the founding fathers put together, and that's what, you know, if you go back and you listen to those clips, I think it's a very refreshing thing, you know, because why was he so popular and he won all but one state? And the only state he didn't win was one his opponent was running from, you know, and people are so frustrated and they think the Republican Party is, oh my God, it's only whatever, 28%, blah, 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 blah. Well, it's because it's a bunch of rhinos lying to people while they tell you one thing and then go to the Congress and do something else. It's not because of, you know, people like Rand Paul and Cruz and Amash and the rest of them. Those people have high response to what they believe in, because what they're doing is speaking directly to you, going, I care about you, my constituents. Like Ted Cruz said over and over again, when people say, well, your people are mad at you and your fellow senators and blah, blah, blah. And he's going, I didn't come here to win a popularity contest. I have, X amount of constituents that voted me into office based on these things. And so I'm going to fight for these things and I'm going to stand on these things. You know, people wonder why 40% of this country are independents. And I get frustrated, and I'd love to break this down because I've done it before, but independents are not necessarily moderates. They're just people who are sick of both parties. What they're looking for is people who will stand up, say what they believe, and follow through on what they believe. That's really what an independent is. I would bet you money that if I had the money to do a poll and ask the questions the way I asked it, I bet you I could get an 80% response on those questions that are basic Tea Party principles. You know, but when you say Tea Party, oh, my God, the Tea Party, they're extremists, they're evil, they're racist. And it's all a bunch of marketing bullcrap by the media and the GOP, or the controllers of the RNC, the rhinos. It is, if you look at the basic core principles of what the Tea Party, what it rose up and what it was founded for, was get the government out of my life. Quit telling me what kind of damn light bulbs, i.e. that was a Republican who pushed that, and what kind of toilet I have to have and car I have to drive and clothes and food and health care. Leave me the hell alone. Let me live my life and make my money and quit stealing so much of it. I don't have a problem with basic fundamental, paying my way along the journey of life in America. You didn't make it, bull crap, But those principles are timeless. And Reagan was able to articulate that to the whole damn nation, and he had huge numbers in the vote wins because of that, both in popular vote and electoral, and numbers of states that he won. So I just want to throw that in there before we roll off.
No, that's a very, very good point. And, look, a lot of the stuff that Trog and I talk about is pretty intimidating. It's pretty scary. It seems like, the country's falling apart. Well, we're not trying to be doomsayers. We're not trying to be pessimists. We're realists. It is what it is. You deal with reality as it is, not as you wish it should be. Okay? You deal with reality as it is, not as you wish it should be. Funny, you're talking about Reagan. I'm looking at him. He's on Fox News right now, June 6th, 1984. But we got a Reagan clip I'll play after the close. But the thing to understand is, for Catholics, today is the beginning of a new year. It is the first day of Advent, the four-week preparation for Christmas, the coming of Christ. And the theme for the first week is hope. And it's the hope in the here and not yet. Here in the sense that the incarnation happened 2,000 years ago, and not yet, as in the second coming, hasn't happened. Well, America's like that, too. I'm not equating America with Christ. It's just a country. It's not a god. But in simple terms, America has always been here and not yet. The republic has never been perfect. Liberty and justice have never been guaranteed for all because it's involving human beings who are flawed. But it is the place where we've had the most liberty and the most justice. And we're losing that because we've dropped the ball. And prosperity comes from those things. So the idea is that you have to hold on to hope. And hope is not some wishful thinking. Hope is a confident and firm belief in a good outcome if you work for it. Now, this country might fall apart. In fact, one day, like all nations and empires, it is going to disappear. But it doesn't have to happen now. It doesn't have to happen on our watch. But it will if you sit back and think participating in a citizen government in a constitutional republic is somehow a spectator sport. It is not. It is full contact all the time. So you hold on to hope, you take a knee, you figure out who you are. You know, if you pray,
pray. If you don't pray, I highly recommend you try it, but at least meditate and figure out what your principles are and what you believe in, and then get up and fight. And fight for what you believe in. Because if this country slips through your fingers, it is not only going to be bad for you personally, it is going to be a shitstorm like we've never seen across the whole planet. And you're going to be held to account for what you did or what you did not do. So ask yourself, what did I do today to advance the cause of liberty? What did I do today to ensure that conservative principles are affected through our representative government? Who did I get involved today that was otherwise not involved and not paying attention? And if you can answer those questions that you did something, good for you. Sadly, got to do more. But if you can't answer those questions in the affirmative and say, well, I didn't do anything today, then you've dropped the ball, and we're losing this republic because you sat back and did nothing. So it's important to hold on to hope, and as we prepare for Christmas and this joyous time of year, remember that it's also the period of time where most people, you know, the most people who have suicidal thoughts or depression, it magnifies it. So help somebody out. But the best way to help people out is to restore the conservative principles to this republic so that more people can have jobs, more people can feel good about themselves, more people can have the means with which to pay for food and clothing and all the things that you need in this life, and maybe help out somebody who's less fortunate. But if we keep going down this train wreck of Obamacare, this train wreck of socialism, this train wreck of fiat money, we're all going to be in abject poverty soon, and we're all going to be holding our hand out to the government, and it's going to take care of us like slaves until it runs out of money and somebody comes in here and forces you to speak Mandarin. So get active, get involved, share the show. We'll be back next week, 10 p.m. Eastern. Get the word out. Remember, you can share the shows after the fact because they're available on our website all the time, Block Talk Radio, Liberty's Thunder. Be positive, because the fact is when things look this bad, that's when the stark contrast with what is good is easily seen. Show it to people.
Right.
America can be that shining city on the hill that Reagan talked about once again. And at this time, we've still got Thanksgiving weekend rolling on. So be thankful for the fact that we can be here having this conversation, standing up for liberty, and talking about restoring it instead of never knowing what it was. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
Liberty's thunder rumbles on.
This is no holiday weekend for the people trying to fix healthcare.gov. They are facing a major deadline. The Obama administration promised that by Sunday, December 1st, the Obamacare website will work for most people trying to buy insurance. Cheryl Atkinson is in Washington. Cheryl, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jeff. As you said, the administration said weeks ago that most of the problems with healthcare.gov would be fixed by the end of the month, but the White House is now urging supporters not to immediately push for new enrollments next week. That's because of concerns about capacity.
The team of technicians brought in to fix healthcare.gov did not take a break for Thanksgiving. They worked through the holiday, trying to meet the administration's self-imposed deadline that the website be fixed by December.
By the end of this month, it will be functioning for the majority of people who are using it. They'll be able to shop, see what their choices are.
Remember, on October 1st, the day healthcare.gov launched, only 6 people were able to enroll. As of early November, there were just under 27,000 enrollments through the federal website. The administration has been tempering expectations, warning that problems will continue.
It's a pretty aggressive schedule to get to the entire punch list by the end of November.
White House officials say error rates and wait times are substantially improved, and healthcare.gov can now handle 50,000 people at once. But they worry that a surge of customers beyond that could provoke another round of outages and negative publicity.
They have the right people. The people have confidence that they're going to get it done.
John Engates is chief technology officer for Rackspace Hosting, which specializes in high-capacity e-commerce. Last week, he was one of a half dozen outside technology experts invited to a private White House Situation Room briefing.
If I had to place a bet, I would certainly say that I'm betting that they're going to get it done.
One way to measure the website's performance is the number of people who've been able to enroll, but it'll be a couple more weeks before we have updated numbers. The administration won't release those until mid-December.
Thank you, Pat, and good morning, everyone. You know, the Statue of Liberty and this wonderful holiday called Thanksgiving go together naturally because although as Americans we have many things for which to be thankful, none is more important than our liberty. Liberty, that quality of government, that brightness of mind and spirit for which the Pilgrim Fathers braved the seas and Americans through two centuries have laid down their lives. Today, while religion is suppressed in perhaps one-third of the world, we Americans are free to worship the Almighty as we choose. While entire nations must endure the yoke of tyranny, we are free to speak our minds, to enjoy an unfettered and vigorous press, and to make government abide by the limits we deem just. While millions live behind walls, we remain free to travel throughout the land, to share this precious day with those we love most deeply, the members of our families. My fellow Americans, let us keep this Thanksgiving Day sacred. Let us thank God for the bounty and goodness of our nation. And as a measure of our gratitude, let us rededicate ourselves to the preservation of this, the land of the free, and the home of the brave. From the Reagan family to your family, happy Thanksgiving and God bless you all.